I'm very excited today to share with you a person I consider to be a great friend, not only to myself, but all men and women in the world. He's an extraordinary human being. His name is Dr. John Gray, and he's the best-selling author of a book I'm sure you've heard of because it's been the number one bestseller forever, called Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. He also wrote a book called What Your Mother Couldn't Tell You and Your Father Didn't Know, and then his newest book, which is Mars and Venus in the Bedroom, and he's written several others as well, but he's an amazing genius, and he's allowed us the privilege to come across the Golden Gate Bridge and arrive here in Mill Valley at his offices. It used to be, I guess, your home.
Yes.
And I just want to thank you for having us, John.
It's a real pleasure.
Great. Well, let's start out with this metaphor that is dominating the culture now. People all over the country and around the world are talking about this thing that started out in your book where you said, once upon a time, these two groups of people used to get together and have great relationships, and then something happened. Tell us, what is that metaphor, if you would, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and maybe give us a little idea about how it evolved for you, and what's the promise of it? What does the understanding really give us? I'd really like to know the history of it, though, too, because I read one of your early books that I'd not seen before. And it was back in 1989, and you'd already had the metaphor. It wasn't as popular then, so give me a sense of that.
Well, to start with, the metaphor itself, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I remember when I first submitted my book, I was Xeroxing a copy of it. It was right on the counter, and a woman looked at it and went, that's right. I mean, everybody hears this title, they go, that's right, they're from Mars, or yes, they're from Venus. And it's such a, people today are hungry to have a positive way of looking at differences between men and women.
Yes.
Because what's been happening is that when we show up differently in a relationship, we tend to think, what's wrong with my partner?
Right.
What flaw is that? Or they need to go to therapy to fix that. Instead of realizing there's certain differences about men and women which are very healthy, but they're different. One's not better than the other. So I started teaching this about 12 years ago, the gender differences. And then it wasn't such a popular subject. And matter of fact, lots of people get all upset and think it was sexism and whatever. And I kept working at, with my groups, how to do it in a way where nobody heard it in a negative way, how to create a positive way. Nobody's offended by it. And there were other people at the time doing this as well. I'm not the first, but what really motivated me to come up with a metaphor of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus is other people were using another metaphor, which was, it's like we live in different countries, which is also a good metaphor.
Right.
So I thought, how can I come up with another way? And it was just, we're from different planets. And when I started talking about it, my audiences loved it. And they would come back and say, you got to tell them about the Martian Venusian thing. And then I developed the whole story, which is, you know, it's good to have a story to sort of hold on to. As the Martians discovered the Venusians, they flew to Venus. They arrived on Venus. They had great relationships, wonderful relationships. And they went on a honeymoon to Earth. And that's kind of what happens. Man meets woman, they fall in love, they go on the honeymoon, and then they hit bottom, they hit Earth. You know, the real problems of life sort of come up. But what happens when they hit Earth is when they arrived on Earth, this lush place, but the spaceship crashed, and they were fine, everything was all right, except one problem. They had selective amnesia. They forgot they were from different planets. And as soon as we forget that we're supposed to be different, as soon as they forgot they're from different planets, then the fight started coming in. Then the tension started coming in because they did one thing. They started trying to change each other instead of nurture each other just the way they are. Because naturally, if someone's feeling loved the way they are, they're going to grow and become more. And I think some people's fears when they misunderstand the title of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, they think what I might be saying is, well, men and women are so different, they'll never change, they'll never understand each other, never get along. And that's the opposite of what I'm saying. I'm saying if you accept someone's differences, then you can begin to understand the validity of who they are. Couples have told me, they'll say, gosh, we used to fight all the time until we read your book. And suddenly, we've always loved each other, we just stopped trying to change each other.
Right.
Once we gave up trying to change each other, we stop fighting.
Plus, if we're all completely the same, then where is the variety of your life? Where is the texture of life? I mean, you know, if you made somebody into who you wanted them to be exactly in your own vision, there'd be no surprise. There'd be none of the opportunities that give so much of the joy to life.
You know, one of the things I tell couples a lot is that when they're complaining about some of the differences or whatever, is I say, you wouldn't be attracted to each other if there weren't differences. It's like, I'm attracted to my wife, Bonnie. She has certain qualities that I don't automatically express.
Right.
They're deep inside me, but through loving her and having a relationship with her and sometimes struggling to validate her point of view, which isn't always easy, okay, to see the value.
I'm going to play this tape for her, John.
But what I have to sort of stretch my consciousness to include her awareness in mine, it makes me a better person. It makes me a more loving person, a more compassionate person, but I make a lot of better decisions in life as well. I mean, I'm more of who I can be through loving someone who's different from me.
Well, then let's get right to it then. Tell me, what's the difference between a Martian and a Venusian? Let's talk about what are some of the emotional need differences, maybe some communication differences as well.
Well, I think the easiest way to see the differences, which I like to focus on now, is when we look at what are some of the biggest mistakes men and women make in relationships.
Great. That was one of my questions.
One of the things that women will do as a normal Venusian thing, and this isn't a mistake, but we men don't understand it and we make mistakes about it. A woman will tend to come home from the day. She has a stressful day, whether she's working or she's been with the kids all day, whichever, or both. She comes home, husband comes home. First thing she wants to do is talk. She wants to talk about everything that went wrong that day. She, oh, this happened, and this happened, I can't believe this happened, and why didn't you call in, and da-da-da, you know.
And the guy's going, I came home to escape all that.
That's it. That's the Martian thing. See, but Martians come home, and men come home, and they've got all their stress. They want to forget their problems. They want to leave their problems behind. Women come home. They have those problems. They want to talk about their problems. And what we don't know as men is that when they're talking about it, we think we're supposed to solve those problems.
Right.
We think that she won't be happy, she can't relax unless those problems get solved. Because for us, we have two ways of dealing with problems. We either solve them, or if there's nothing we can do to solve it, we temporarily forget it.
Right.
So the fact that she's bringing these issues up, we think...
Adds to our burden.
It adds to our burden. We feel like, gosh, I've just been working all day. Now I got to solve these problems. And another hidden burden is the man instinctively feels, well, she's got all these problems. She's not going to be a happy woman until we solve them all.
Right.
So that's why he starts being really... In a hurry, in a sense, to well, this is what you have to do about this, and don't worry about this,
So what happens when he starts to try and solve these problems?
So that's where the tension comes in between men and women, because as soon as he starts trying to solve the problems, the feeling she has is he's trying to shut her up, that he doesn't care about what she's going through.
She starts
to feel, you're not listening. So then what she'll say is, honey, he'll say, this is what you ought to do. And she'll say, no, you don't understand. And he goes, what do you mean I don't understand? I heard what you said. Of course I understand. But what she really means when she says you don't understand is what she really means is, you don't understand, John. I don't want you to solve these problems. I don't want you to fix anything. I just want you to understand what I'm going through. I've had a difficult day. I just really want you to listen. Empathize, make a few nice gestures, noises, like...
But I do understand. That's why I want to help you.
That's right. And it is true. That's what men, they understand and they want to solve the problem. But what we have to learn is men...
Men say, why would we talk about a problem and not do something to solve
right.
it?
That's right. What's the point in it? Why even talk about it? You know?
Every woman wants to say, listen to these two men having a great time talking about women.
So
tell me then, so what should we do? What should men do specifically?
So the one of the techniques, and I think it's in my book, What Your Mother Couldn't Tell You, Your Father Didn't Know. It's skills, techniques that our fathers couldn't teach us. They didn't know. One of the skills in there I teach men is called ducking and dodging. Okay. When she's talking about problems, men hear it as solutions. I mean, that we're being called upon to solve it. And so what you do is just duck. Let it pass by. Let it pass by. Don't give the solution. Keep ducking. And sometimes women will say things like, which men take personally. She'll say things like, we never spend time together. Or you never listen to me. Or we're always rushing. And a guy will hear those expressions and he'll take them personally. What do you mean we're always rushing? We weren't rushing last Thursday night. I did a great job that night. That's called taking it personally. And of course, the woman will say, well, why can't you just listen? I'm not talking about you. And he says, well, you're talking about me. You're talking to me. It's about me.
Right.
So we have to that's called dodging. Just let it go by. Don't take it personally.
So when you let it go by, won't the woman feel like you're not listening?
Well, certainly she could feel like you're not listening if you're kind of inside going, okay, let the old lady talk for a while, you know, go on. You can't do that. You know, you can't be rolling your eyes.
So how do you actively listen?
Actively listening is you look in her direction is the first thing. And this is something
in her direction, not necessarily at her, but her direction.
look in her direction. Well, you know, I could say men just look right into her eyes, but most men, if you look right into a woman's eyes while she's talking about her feelings, your mind just goes blank. You don't know what she's saying. So just look sometimes in her eyes, but look in her direction. It's the first thing. Because you know what men will do when their wives talk is after about a minute or two, we start looking away, you know? Either we're thinking about
Which
what she's saying,
right.
or we're just, our mind is getting distracted. So the first thing is body position, look in her direction. Second thing is movement of body. Occasionally move your head up and down, you know? Occasionally, you know, if she's going, oh, it was awful.
Fundamentals for the Cro-Magnon man.
That's right, fundamentals for the Cro-Magnon man. But you know what? The reality is...
They just don't do it, even though it sounds so simplistic. Most of them don't do it.
But most of them don't do it.
Because men get in a trance when this happens, what they're trying to do is they're trying to fight this need to solve the problem.
Well, most guys are waiting. We're sitting there waiting till we can now do something about it. So when are you going to get to the point? What's the problem? Let me help you here. Then we'll go on and be happy. So we're in this waiting mode instead of actively listening.
So are you telling me that women are then happy while they're expounding about the problem? Is that true?
Well, this is the irony. They're not really happy while they're talking about the problem. Sometimes they'll become even more unhappy while they're talking about it. But when they're done, they'll be really happy.
Well, when will they be done? I'm going to get killed.
All the
women listeners are going to kill me right now.
No, but it's just you're the ultimate Martian, Tony. There's no doubt about it.
That's unfair.
But you know our point of view very well, of course. But that's what a man's thinking when a woman is talking. She says, well, how long? And what I say to men is that you don't know how long. You never know how long. But what you do is you realize that this is the thing you can do that will make a woman is happiest if she knows when she comes home, she can share about her day and her partner will listen attentively. But you can't just put this all on men to do. There's a woman's role.
That was my next question, the flip side.
Because men can't just do this without some help from women.
Right.
There's like I talk about how men can listen without getting upset, and that's ducking and dodging. Don't give solutions, don't take it personally.
Right.
Now what we do when we give solutions, and this is really a relevant point.
But let me say this one, but care about how they feel without having to solve it is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. You try to care about how they feel.
Come on, John.
No, but the reality is sometimes your wife's talking and a part of you is going, why is she talking about this? This isn't that important.
But see, I've experienced that, though, even on issues where it's not a problem. I remember one time we went to the south of France and we were on this incredibly busy schedule. And then she said, I want to go. We went to a meeting at an old home, an old chateau. And she said, oh, my gosh, I would so love to have a place like this. I'd love to come and live here for a month. And immediately I was like, a month? Come here. This place is dark. It's terrible. I don't have any time anymore. Buy another house. I can't buy another house. We got houses we've never even seen. I was so stressed out. We had this really intense, I turned into this argument about how ungrateful she is for all that I do. You know, I was such a perfect Martian. And at the end, she said to me, finally got to communicating. She goes, I don't have to have this place. Can I just dream? I said, dream. You dream to achieve. If you dream something, I got to make it happen. Don't you understand? You can't put a dream out there expecting not to manifest it. That's my job in life, right? You know? So I don't think it's just problems this happens with. I think sometimes it has to do with mutual goals or
desires.
Absolutely.
For single women, for example, this is something they don't realize, a way they unknowingly turn off men. Because a woman could be driving through, a guy could be courting a woman and happen to be going by beautiful homes. And let's say he doesn't see one day him being able to afford that home.
Right.
And she's over there going, wow, look at that home. It's beautiful. They got that pool in the back. Oh, I'd love to live in a home like that. She's just dreaming, like you're saying. He's thinking, she wants me to buy a house like that? She's got to have a pool like that? There's no way I'm going to be able to afford that for her. This woman, I'll never be able to please her. I'll never be able to make her happy. And then he'll start pulling away. And she wasn't saying, you've got to provide this for me.
Right.
She's just saying, wouldn't that be really wonderful?
What you're really describing is, if and tell me if this is accurate, is that women are more process-oriented as a gross generalization, because I have to say about all of this is these are metaphors.
Yeah,
they're gross generalizations about the society as a whole. They aren't individuals because they're individual exceptions to all these people.
Right.
But as a generalization, understand another gender or another person from another planet, are women then more process oriented and does their physiology, you know, help to contribute to that? Because we have differences in our physiology that are very real.
Huge differences in physiology. And first, to answer the first question, yes, women tend to be much more process oriented and men tend to be much more goal oriented.
Completion
oriented. So let's give an example of what that means for people, okay? Because process oriented would mean my wife would come to me and want to talk about something and she doesn't even have a goal in mind. She just knows there's problems or issues or something good to talk about, but she hasn't yet planned anything about it. She hasn't even thought about what we're going to do. She could be talking about Hawaii, and she's not yet even planning a vacation to Hawaii. Whereas a man, if he's going to go talk to his wife about Hawaii, he's going to first think, all right, maybe we ought to have a vacation in Hawaii. Let me go see if I can afford a vacation in Hawaii.
Right.
Let me see if there's some place I'd really want to go. Let me figure out the best island to go to. Then I'd say, honey, let's go on a vacation in Hawaii. What do you think? And her reaction is, what? You did all this planning? And you're thinking about all this stuff and you didn't even include me? Isn't my point of view important to you? Because see, that's the whole thing. And even in business, women make this mistake a lot. They'll go to an upper level management position and they'll share problems with the upper level management. And the guy, particularly if it's a man, he'll think, so what are you going to do about it? And in many cases, she hasn't even gotten to the solution. She would feel it's rude to talk about the solution without first everybody having a voice
right.
to talk about the problem or talk about the issue. Once we fully talked about, that's the process of getting there. Then we decide where exactly we want to go, what we want to do about it.
Right.
So it's important that we understand the differences from each other's point of view.
Does physiology play a role in that? Or is that cultural conditioning or both?
Well, certainly there's some cultural conditioning here.
Sure.
But there's physiology, and that's what's becoming more and more known each year. And it's very exciting research, particularly in the brain. The brain research shows that men and women's brains, certainly there's a lot of similarities, but there's a lot of differences. And even more importantly, how we use our brains is different. Repeatedly, the studies, which are the most current studies, are showing men will tend to use one part of the brain at a time. It's like task-oriented, project-oriented.
Right.
What are we going to do? How are we going to get there? Whereas women will tend to use many parts of the brain at the same time.
Right.
So she could be exploring and talking and slowly developing her idea of what she wants to do or what she doesn't want to do. And I'm not saying men can't do this. But our tendency is if there's a problem, let's get right to the solution. We have in our brain, there's certain hormones that allow us to control impulses. Men have less of those than women. Women will tend to, if they're upset about something, their tendency is to want to talk first before acting. Men will have a tendency, if there's distress or danger or lots of anger or hurt or fear, we want to do something right away.
Right.
So when we're talking to our wives and she seems to be distressed about something, we immediately want to do something.
Right.
And this, you know, we said, why are we this different? Well, if you look back to, you know, the basic role we men have had in women's lives for thousands of years, if there's a problem, we have to go and you know, shoot an animal or kill somebody or do something. We're in the dangerous role. And when
right.
you have a dangerous job, you have to learn how to react fast.
Mm.
So when there's fear, you act fast. Whereas, so we have much faster reaction in our brain when there's emotions to do something, whereas women have much more reaction to talk about it.
And the oldest story in the history of mankind in all cultures in the world is the story of the hero, which invariably in those days, most of the time, most cultures, was a man who went out and braved all these difficult situations to finally win the hand of the woman. Talk to me about the aspect of what, come back, because we've talked a little about the differences, but let's come back to some more of those differences, and more importantly, what we can do with our understanding of them. What does a man want in a relationship? What does a woman want in a relationship?
Well, what we were just talking about is what men and women want, and we're going to expand on it, but let me finish those other
okay.
points we just had, because it's really important. We talked on one side. We said what a man
right,
can do.
Right, exactly.
A man needs to practice listening without giving advice, without taking it personally, and if you are taking it personally, men, then the most noble thing to do is to say, I need some time to think about this, and then we'll talk again. Because once you've taken something personally, that means you feel attacked.
Right.
A man will attack back.
Sure.
There's nothing you can do to stop that except get out of that environment.
Right.
And this is the big mistake couples make, is once a man starts misunderstanding the woman's point of view, and it really is a misunderstanding, we will interpret all kinds of things as attack when really she doesn't know she's attacking, but we think it's attack. Once a man's feeling attacked, rejected, criticized, blamed for something, when he feels unfairly being approached that way, his adrenaline, his whole emotional system, parts of his brain get activated, which causes him to attack back.
Right.
At that point, there's no man on this planet who can sound loving, kind, sensitive, and considerate of his partner. The tone of our voice will be so much stronger at that point that now she has to defend herself against us. And now you have two defensive people. You're not going to go anywhere.
Right.
So what I put on men is the responsibility as the warrior, as the hero, to protect your wife. And what do you protect her from? The dragon inside himself.
Hmm.
And that's what we have to do. It used to be we protected women from the dragons in the outer world.
Right.
Today, because there aren't that many dragons in the outer world, we've got armies and police and all that stuff.
Right.
What happens is the dragon comes out at home. And what he has to do is to protect her from that. When a woman sees that a man can do that, her love for him grows immensely. Her heart opens at a deeper level than ever experienced before. When she sees he can control his anger, and that's what I'm talking about. Mm. Not
that creates trust.
That creates trust, which is the most important element in a relationship. So I'm not asking men to not get angry when women talk to us. But if you're getting angry, that means it's time to take a time out, time to cool off. Round one is over.
Break the pattern.
Break the pattern.
Right.
Get out of the room. Then come back in and say, you know, I've thought about it, and you reflect a little bit on what she said, and I understand what you were saying is this and this and this. Then she feels heard. Then what you do is continue the conversation. But the man needs to be the primary person to regulate that, because if a woman feels she has to regulate it, then she starts feeling like she's the protector.
Right.
And suddenly she starts becoming too Martian.
Right.
And then when women become too Martian, like they're the protector and all this, they tend to become more motherly, and they start to mother the man. And this is one of the killers of passion, is when women start mothering a man too much.
Interesting. Do women test that anger level? Do they see it? Is that something that women do from what you've done? I mean, first of all, you've been doing this for 20 years.
Yes.
We should mention that. So you're not just coming from having talked to a few people
or
your own personal perception. I think it's important for people to realize that. So in 20 years and all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of people you've dealt with, is that a test? Is there a test in a relationship for that?
It's a test. Many times women will actually, I call it throw darts. Okay, if you're being Mr. Cool, centered, and everything's fine, she'll start throwing darts because she wants to get some feeling from you. She wants to get some energy going. So they'll start saying things to get you going. Now, part of why they do this is they know from instinctively that if she's upset, if a Venusian's upset, and you get her talking about what she's upset about, she'll start to love you more. See, that's how women get back to a loving place, is through communication. Okay. So when a man is not in a very loving place, a woman will try to get him to talk, get him to feel, get him to be upset, and she thinks she's helping the situation, but really she's making it worse.
Because what she thinks is it creates more connection. At least he's listening, or at least there's some interaction. Right. How does a man get back to that loving place if he's not feeling loving?
Well, what a man needs to do is have strategies and formulas that he knows will be effective. You know, if you have no strategies and formulas that you know will be effective, you're going to be depressed. Man needs to feel he knows what to do. You're in a situation, a woman's saying all this stuff, you're starting to get upset about it. Part of what's most upsetting is you don't know what to do in that moment to make the situation better.
So besides getting away from it for a moment,
he thinks about it. It's the first thing.
What should he ask himself? Give me some specifics in this area, if you would.
There's four questions he should ask himself.
Good.
Basically, what just happened?
Or what really just happened, too.
Well, that as well.
That might be a good question.
You know,
what really happened?
There's so many times when I was counseling couples, when I would stop them, I'd say, what are you arguing about? What are you arguing about? And they're arguing about different things.
Mm.
That happens so much of the time. So what you need to do is first say, what just happened?
Okay.
And then you want to go into details. The more objective a man can become about a situation, the more calm he'll become, the more centered he'll be, the more loving he'll be. The more subjective a woman can be in a situation, the more loving she'll be, which is why you want to help women communicate feelings. That's why a woman can come home from a stressful day, communicate about what's bothering, what's not bothering, and suddenly she feels better.
Right.
Whereas for a man, he needs to become more objective, which is like watching TV is one of the things.
But that also feels disassociated, I'm sure, to a woman.
Well, that's what, and so women tend to think, oh, he needs therapy, or he doesn't care, I'm not important to him.
Right.
But that's his way of coping with stress.
And that's the difference between the two planets.
That's right.
You don't want to try and change the other person.
You don't want to change it. Otherwise, you'll lessen that person's effectiveness for coping with stress.
Mm.
But now once, as a Martian, I pulled back. I've asked myself, what happened?
Okay.
What was said or done? Okay. Actually try to remember the words that she said and what that do is just helping you be more effective. What happened? What was said and done? What didn't happen that you would have liked to have happened?
Good
so now
question.
You're in solution mode.
Great.
Okay. And now what can I do about it?
Great.
So you're right there back to, you identify objectively what's the problem. Then you identify how you wish it had gone intellectually.
Right.
Then you go, what can I do about it?
Right.
And always in the situation where there's a rift between a man and a woman, if there's tension, what you do as a man is you go back and you apologize. Now, this is something many men go, what? What? That never worked, or I don't want to do that. That's because nobody ever taught men how to apologize. We never saw our fathers apologizing all the time. If our fathers did apologize, it was a wimp apology. This is a wimp apology, and it doesn't work. You come back and you go, well, I'm sorry, but that's the man you married.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Oh, it's terrible. What's the right way to apologize?
Well, and here's one other wrong way to do it, which when we do, this is what we'll tend to do, and it doesn't work. We go off, I call it going off to your cave, okay? You pull away your place where you think, and you do things on your own. So he pulls away. He thinks about the situation. He sees his part in it, generally sees her part in it. Now you go back to apologize. And at that point, when men do apologize, what they'll do, they have an attitude, and this attitude doesn't work. And their attitude is, okay, I'm sorry. It was my fault. Now, can we get off it? Okay? That's the attitude we have, you know? Because, you know, if we were doing business together and we had a riff, and I came back to you and said, Tony, it's my fault. I'm sorry. Can you get off it? You get off it. You go, as long as you know it was your fault, John, I can trust you again.
That's okay? Right. You're being responsible.
You're being responsible. It's all objective. But when you're dealing in intimacy, it's a whole other thing. And the biggest complaint women have is they say, he comes to me, apologizes, he expects suddenly I'm going to go, oh, okay, honey, thanks for apologizing. I feel so much better.
Because the man says, well, then why would I apologize if it's not going to do that? What's the use?
That's the point. So that's exactly it. So once he's done it a few times and it doesn't work, he goes, why bother apologizing?
Exactly.
It doesn't work. See, the truth is, though, an apology does work if you don't expect it to work, meaning you're not giving this message, this should end the conversation.
Right.
But you have to come to it from another point of view, is I'm going to apologize, and this will now begin.
Starts the process.
It starts the process.
And men who hate to go through process.
And men hate to go through process.
I don't need any more processes. I've got so many processes at work. I came home to finally relax.
So we have to have formulas, some simple formulas here for men on apologizing.
That makes
sense. Now, as a big picture, practice apologizing for little things, so that you're in the habit of it. Don't wait till you've done something big to apologize for.
See, for example?
Well, like what happened today.
Oh, now we're getting to the real skinny here.
Okay, so somebody leaves a message for me on the message machine. Oh, no, somebody calls, I answer my wife's line. I'm supposed to give her a message, I forget.
John, I'll catch you.
Right, so she says, you know, so-and-so called. They told me that they told you 2 days ago. Sure would have helped if you had told me. Now, my first reaction is sometimes to give some excuse. That's the thing men will tend to do, is give an excuse. Oh, I was going to tell
you. You mean a reason, don't you?
That's right. That's what I do mean. In Martian terms, I mean a reason. You give a reason. And you know what? There's always a reason for anything you do. Okay? So the first thing in apologizing is never give the reason why you did it. Now, in business, of course you'd have to give a reason.
Right.
But in intimacy, particularly if a man gives a reason to a woman why he did what he did, the message she hears is, oh, that's such a good reason. I suppose I'm not supposed to be upset now? See, that's what she hears. A good reason says to her.
And a man says, yes, that's exactly why you're not supposed to be upset.
That's right. You should be upset.
Logical.
Women, just as men want to be right at those times, women want to have the right to be upset. And if you've got a great reason, she doesn't have the right to be upset. Now, sometimes you have an enormous great reason, like you're late because there was a traffic accident.
Because you were rushing around getting these flowers for her.
That as well. Okay. So you have a really, really great reason. But even then, hold off on that reason until after you've apologized and she's talked for a little bit and she's more interested in what your reason is.
So what did you say? I want to hear your response then. What did you say to her?
Oh, immediately. Whenever any little thing happens, that's my mistake. That was my mistake. Oh, that was my mistake.
Now,
first,
when you said that, though, you knew it wasn't over when you said that was
over. Oh, of course.
Mistake.
That's the secret, is you have to know it's not over, okay. But you're acknowledging the beginning of the process is starting now. Because if you don't say, it's my mistake, I'm sorry. If you don't say that, that process never really
starts.
So
how did she respond to that?
Oh, what she said is, well, you ought to tell me because I didn't hear that call. I went ahead and went to the appointment. I went into this and this and this. So she's going to go on and tell me all the negative side of it. So I just listen.
And her looking in her direction.
And looking in her direction, that's right. You got it all down here. Look at your direction. So, and I might reiterate.
You probably nodded, made some interesting sounds.
Make some sounds. Okay. But the key here is to stay in one position, which is, it's my mistake, I'm sorry. And don't say it that often, a few times. It's my mistake, I'm sorry. She talks a little bit. Then you come through. This is like the close on an apology, okay? And this is the close, which is, I was insensitive. Or I was definitely inconsiderate of your needs.
Right.
Or if it's an argument you got into and you're wanting to make up from an argument, you come back and you say, you know, that was my mistake. Even though in your mind you say, she made 15 mistakes too. Doesn't matter. Your side, you look, I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
What's great about that is it's holding yourself to a higher standard as a human being. And so instead of looking at it as, I'm doing this just to say, make an apology to make somebody happy, so maybe some people can look at it as saying, what I'm really doing is just raising my standards in life of how I treat others and what I expect from myself.
It's absolutely true. When I do this, I'm not just doing a formula to appease my wife.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if people feel it's a formula, then they won't do it.
Hit it right on the nail. After I've even said it, then I start really thinking about the truth of it. It's
right.
Like putting my word out there. But see, the way I look at it, whenever there's a problem with my wife, it's my mistake. Because in any situation,
you're going to have a lot of women calling you for, see if you're still married or not, they want you now. My mistake.
But it's men, and you're right.
But should women think the same thing?
No, we'll get to women in a second.
Oh, okay.
It's my mistake, I'm sorry. And then this is just for men, not for women. You use a negative adjective or a negative noun to describe yourself. Now, what I mean by that, I was insensitive, okay? I was inconsiderate. I overreacted to the situation. And any time a man argues with a woman, he has overreacted to the situation.
Why do you say that?
Because if you are in your center as a man, knowing what to do, you'll never be upset with your partner. You'll always be forgiving. Think about it. Whenever you're upset and you're trying to when you figure it out, you become objective,
that's
you feel better.
Because when people don't know what to do, I should say at least men, when men don't know what to do, it stresses them out. Even if there's a problem, if I know what the problem is, if people know what it is and they know what to do about it, They may not like it, but they can easily deal
with it.
That's
right. You don't get angry about it. You go, this is what I got to do.
So part of that is what this tape is about, our interview is about, is teaching both sides. Okay, when you start to get stressed, you're going to respond differently to stress, whether you're male or female, and here's how to deal with it.
That's right. Now, this is real important. I'm talking about apologies mainly for men. That's the biggest lesson we have to learn in relationships. The biggest lesson for women is forgiveness. See, we're not going to keep apologizing if we're not going to get forgiveness. And women aren't going to forgive us if we don't apologize.
And if we don't apologize sincerely and in a way that's real.
That's right. That's right. But
in a way that doesn't keep them from having the right to be upset for a bit more.
That's exactly it right there. So it's, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. You listen to what they have to say. If they have anything to say, and if they say nothing, sometimes they just look at you. Okay. Right. Then what you have to think and you go, you know, I was really insensitive or I was inconsiderate. And think about it for a minute here, Tony. Anytime a woman is upset with you, it's because you didn't fulfill one of her needs, right?
Right.
Therefore, you were inconsiderate of her needs. Because had you known what her needs are, you would have done it differently.
Okay, I'll buy that.
And men don't go around thinking, how can I ruin my wife's life?
Right.
You know,
I think it's one of the things that screws up relationships when people question the person's intent. So if someone says to you, well, you know, you don't really care, and you know you really care.
Then you have an argument right there.
Then you have an argument right there. Because what they're doing is they're attacking your identity. They're attacking who you are as a person, and you know that's not true.
That's right.
You know, but if she said that was not very considerate, you go, well, yeah, that's probably true. So I hear what you're saying. What you're saying is you really are willing to apologize, and the reason you believe that there's ever a problem, it's you were insensitive or you were inconsiderate.
I was.
It's because you didn't meet the person's needs. And so the ultimate evidence is if a person's unhappy, it's because their needs aren't met. And our job in a relationship is to meet the other person's needs if we want to have our needs met.
That's right.
Okay, I'll buy that.
And once you get
that makes sense. That's logical for even a Martian.
That's right.
It's
once a Martian gets that, then suddenly he can do it without feeling like he's a little child going
exactly.
to mommy
saying
asking,
I'm
insensitive. A bad person, you know? Because, hey, we are insensitive. We don't know Venusians at times. That's right, at times. We do overreact at times.
And women, of course, don't.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Oh, okay.
We're not talking about women at all.
Just checking to make sure you're a balanced human here.
On Venus.
Okay, bring me to Venus.
On
now.
Venus, reaction is part of who they are. Okay, you know what we love most as men is a very responsive woman in bed, right? We want lots of noises, lots of fireworks, lots of happiness, lots of feeling out of her. Well, if you want lots of happiness and feeling in bed, well, at other times when she's disappointed, you're going to get lots of feeling there too.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with it. It's an emotional being.
No, we don't want a logical response to sex then. That was nice. Adjust to the left, please.
Exactly. We want a fully feeling person. Now, when I start talking this way, somebody might hear me and go, well, does that mean men can't be fully feeling? No, men can be fully feeling. Men can be angry. Men can be hurt. Men grieve. We have all those feelings. But we can share those feelings with a woman if we're not upset with her. That's the thing. If we're upset with her, we need to pull away, come back to the objectivity.
Because then she'll feel attacked, basically.
That's right.
And that just escalates it on both sides.
That's right. So you can share feelings. We can be feeling people. We are feeling people. But in a situation of tension between men and women, the man's job is to become more objective. The woman's job is to share her feelings. But how can a woman share her feelings in a way that makes it easier for a man to listen?
Okay, let's get to
that. That's coming over the female side. Okay.
We're in Venus now. So
we're in Venus now. This is for what Venusians can do to communicate their feelings so that men will listen to them much easier. It's to help them out.
Which ultimately enhances the depth of the entire relationship.
Of course. Gives her what she wants, gives him what he wants. Okay. They grow more intimate. It's a matter of understanding men and what makes us tick. What a man wants most is to feel successful and providing fulfillment for his partner.
Why?
Why? That's the way we feel loved. When a man does something and a woman says, thank you, we feel good about ourselves. Now, where this came, if you want to ask why, we can go historically why. What was a man's role in a woman's life? As you mentioned before, the hero. We went out and did something and saved the woman or provided something for the woman. We got love for that. And that's how men receive love the most is through their actions, what we do, what we provide. As opposed to, let's say I'm in a bad mood, my wife was to come up and put her arms around me and say, why don't you tell me how you feel about that? That might be nice if I'm looking for it, but that's not the main thing I'm needing in my life. Right. What a man needs most is to feel successful in fulfilling his partner. What a woman needs most is to feel that he is successful in fulfilling her. Women need to feel that they have someone they can rely on and trust and depend upon who's there for them, particularly at their times of need. So instead of even going why, because there could be other reasons. I mean, why is grass green?
Right.
But the reality is, as I came across this, was just looking, studying couples that came to me for counseling. And what I would hear from women when they were ready to leave a man was, I've given and I've given, and no matter how much I give, I don't get what I need. I'm feeling empty. I need to receive more. They feel guilty. It sounds so selfish, but they say, but I've given and I've given, I've given. I need to receive more and I'm not getting it.
And what are they not receiving when they're ready to leave a man?
They're not receiving the love in terms of what they need. They're not receiving understanding. They don't feel respected and honored. They generally don't feel cherished or special, and they don't feel like he cares.
Right.
Those are the things
a
woman...
They don't listen to.
Like he doesn't listen, right. Like if she's upset. You know, what does it mean to say you care about a woman? What I say to men, go back to when you had your first new car. And you're driving around in a new car, you're so proud of your new car, you're so happy about your new car, you bought it, it's really great, and then you come out outside one day and somebody's dinged the side of it. You go, oh, my car, it's like somebody dinged the insides of you, okay? That is caring, okay? That's caring.
So that's how you have to respond. When
that's
you
right, that's right. If she's had a bad day, oh, honey, that's awful. Oh, okay, you know. Instead of like lots of guys do.
I love how you get into the man's feelings. Remember your car.
Yeah, remember your car. That's it, that's it.
Oh, that's amazing. So come back to women for me now. So what does a woman need to do?
Women need to understand the way men think and how men need to feel loved. And I was giving the example, when women are ready to leave a man, it's because they haven't received what they need. But when a man's leaving a woman, he doesn't come to me and says, well, I need this, and I need this, and I need this, and I don't get it. He doesn't say, I've been giving, and I don't get back. What he says is, I've done everything I can, and no matter what I do, it's not enough to make her happy. Men primarily want the woman to be happy. If she's happy, he's happy. Why? Because he's successfully provided for. Our sense of self is much more strongly identified with our action and our behavior.
Right.
A woman's sense of self, it is identified with action and behavior, but much more with her feeling self, with her emotional side.
So a woman who acknowledges the strength or success of her partner is going to have, and showing that she's happy, where he knows that she's happy, is going to cause that relationship to expand in its depth and its passion and its joy.
Absolutely. You know, women are saying, my husband ignores me. Men never ignore happiness. Okay, a happy woman, man's attention goes right to it. The media knows this. This is why sex sells. All those sex advertisements, women dressed in sexy outfits, they're saying, hey, I'm a happy woman and you can make me happier. Men are not so much attracted to sex. It's a happy woman that we're attracted to. It's just that when women are happy, that's when they want sex. That's why sex gets men's attention. It's really a woman's happiness. Because when a woman is happy, she is most loving. And when she's most loving, the man gets what he needs. Men need the love that comes when a woman is feeling happy. Now, this doesn't mean that she has to be happy all the time.
Right.
Because she can't. She's from Venus. Venusians are never happy all the time. They go up and they go down. You know, if my wife's really happy, part of me goes, okay, John, you might have one more day of this and the wave's going to crash tomorrow, okay? Be prepared.
Well, you've got some metaphors around that. You're talking about men are the sun and the women are the moon?
Well, that's in the sex book. But this is, women are like waves, okay? This is what
men have to
understand.
Men are like rubber bands.
Men are like rubber bands.
Clarify that.
Okay.
You're Dr. Metaphor, by the way. That's really who you are here.
So Dr. Metaphor here. Well, it's easy for men to understand this way, but it's like, a wave goes up, a wave goes down. And when the wave hits bottom, it automatically goes up. This is what men have to understand about women. You can do everything right. On some days, she's going to think you're the greatest guy. But you keep doing everything the same. Once that wave reaches a peak, it's going to crash. And on that day when it's crashed, you are not Mr. Wonderful. There's nothing you can do about
it. No matter what you do.
Life is not wonderful for her that day.
That sounds like a dodging and ducking day from what you told me.
That's the dodging and ducking day. And you know, even in terms of what men know and men and women know in business, when do you invest your money most in the real estate market? When the prices are down.
Right.
When do you buy stock?
Right.
When the stock is down. When do you give women the love the most? When she's down. That's what we have to learn as men. Men, without understanding women, what we think is, I'll wait till she's in a good mood. Then I'll do nice things for her because then she acknowledges it and appreciates it. When a woman is really down, what that means by definition that she's down, it means she has no love to give that day. Okay. If she has no love to give and you do something for her, you can't expect to get any response. It's like a job that doesn't pay until the end of the month, okay? You put your work in, and that's the time to work on the relationship the most is when it's down.
Because she also will have that memory of the elephant in a good way in this way.
That's right. What she'll remember is after she's down and she goes up, she thanks you. That's right. The whole key. And she thinks you're wonderful. You've got at least several weeks where you're the king. But that wave is going to crash again. That's where you have to practice the ducking and dodging. But when a woman is not down in that place at other times, because then it's hard for her to remember any techniques. Those feelings are just going to come out. That's when men have to do a lot of what I just suggested. But at other times, when she's more centered and more loving, what she can do is establish good, healthy communication habits with the man in her life. Just remembering, he's from Mars. you need to do a little something extra to have communication be effective than if she was just talking with another Venusian. And it looks like this. She comes home. She wants to talk about issues and problems or whatever of her day. She sees him. First thing she needs to do is greet him in a positive way. Oh, honey, I'm so glad to see you. And really be glad to see him because he can be of great service now. He can serve her by listening. But she has to just remind him that that's all she needs. Otherwise, he's going to go into solving the problem.
Right, and it's another burden.
It's another burden on him. So what she needs to do is just say, hi, honey. And he says, oh, hi. And she's excited to see him. I've had such a day today. I just need to talk about it. And he goes, well, okay. And then she says, now I just want to remind you, you don't have to say anything, you don't have to do anything about this. I just need to talk about it and I'll feel better. That's called pausing and preparing. For men, it's the two D's, duck and dodge. For women, it's the two P's, pause, prepare. Pause from doing what you would automatically do from Venus.
Right.
Pause. Speak Martian language just a little bit to prepare him. Martian language is give him a job description. Real quick, job description. And let him know what he's going to get paid, okay? That's what a man needs. Right? Tell me what to do and what I'm going to get paid, and I'll do it.
We'll have sex. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's funny.
Now, the payment is really, you're giving him the payment when you say, I just need to talk about this for a few minutes, and then I'll feel better. Because that's all he wants.
Because he wants her to be happy.
He just wants her to be happy. He just, in the old days, without understanding Mars, Venus, he thought the way to make her happy was to give her solutions, to cut her short, to put out the fire, to put her out of distress, in a sense. And what she really needs is just to talk about her feelings so that he, and have someone that loves her, who cares about her, understand what she's going through.
And the evidence of that is that he's willing to listen. He's willing to empathetically listen.
Right. Now, listening empathetically is a skill most men have to develop. Most men, the way their brains operate, when something is emotional, it triggers us emotionally, which is we empathetically respond to someone. Let's say she's distressed. Now we start feeling her distress. Right. Our emotions are getting involved. We suddenly want to do something. So while she's talking, we're now planning out what to do. We're now thinking what to do. And as I mentioned before, our brains are different. Men tend to use one part of the brain at a time. Women use many parts of the brain at a time. So women can have conversations, they're emotionally thinking, everything's happening at the same time. Whereas a man will hear emotionally for a moment, then he goes over to another part of his brain, now he's problem solving.
Right.
And while he's problem solving, he's not empathizing. So she feels him immediately distancing himself.
Disconnected, right?
Disconnected. She can't connect with him. So what we have to learn as men is how to continue listening without problem solving. The first step is just keep our mouths closed, make little noises of reassurance, look in her direction, as I said, and stay in that part of the brain. But what will make it 10 times, 100 times easier for a man to do this, if a woman just gives this brief job description, she says, honey, I just need to talk about this. You don't have to say anything or do anything. And once I get it out, I'll feel better. Then she does it.
Right.
After 3 to 5 minutes, no more in the beginning, she needs to pause, take a deep breath. Thanks so much for listening. I just needed to get that out. I feel so much better.
So she'll train him. She'll train him. It's only a 3 to 5 minute thing.
It's not even training. It's really loving him. That's what it is. Mm. It's you've listened. Now you appreciate
him. Give something back.
And give something back. Which means he did something. He needs his reward. He needs to know I can help her. Because if she just keeps going on and on and on, he goes, why even do this? It doesn't seem to help. He needs clear messages that says this really helps. So she talks for a while. Then she says, you know, this really helps. Thanks a lot. Then what she needs to do is walk away. This is a very important point. Just as men in conflict, if they're getting angry, they need to walk away. Well, if a woman has shared with a man and he's listened and she appreciates him for it, she needs to walk away. If she doesn't walk away,
she'll keep talking
or she'll ask him.
She'll get in the state.
And she'll try to get him to talk. That's what women do. They talk and they go, well, now how do you feel, Tony? And no matter what you say, it's going to be wrong.
Well, why is that?
Well, most of the time, if they ask you, well, what do you think about that? You're going to start solving the problem. You're going to start saying, well, honey, I think if you did it this and this and this, then you wouldn't have to worry about that. And I'll be glad to do this. And they go, I knew it. You weren't listening. You don't understand. I just needed to share.
I was listening. That's why I'm telling you what you can do about it.
I know. And what you bring up there is true for every single man. He goes to work, he gives solutions, and people pay him for it.
That's
he comes home, he gives solution, and it doesn't even make his wife happy.
Right.
Then his ego gets caught up in here, and that's what starts fueling his frustration. See, she's frustrated because she's not getting what she needs. He's frustrated because he's given all his diamonds and jewels of solutions, and they're not making a difference at all. And suddenly you have two people who feels, no matter what I say, it doesn't help.
Right.
Why even listen? And what she says, well, I share. He doesn't understand, so why even bother? He doesn't care.
And then it just gets worse and worse and worse.
It goes downhill until the communication stops. So to bring it back, what a woman can do is just pause and prepare. You see him, you just prepare him. Honey, I just need to talk about this, get it out, I'll feel so much better. And then you do it, you finish, you walk away. And what happens is he thinks, gee, that worked. That was easy. I made her happy. And after a few months of this, guys will come home. They'll start asking her, honey, how's your day? Tell me about it. It's an easy job to listen to her talk about problems if he doesn't feel he has to solve them.
That's fantastic because it gives people, you know, such a clarity as to why they go through so many conflicts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're telling people where the arguments really come from, and you're telling people what the solutions really are, how to get out of those. Tell me, what's one of the funniest or most playful or one most enjoyable ways to end an argument? Tell me, if it starts to be an argument, people start to get upset with one another, what can men do, what can women do that's playful? So it isn't just a formula, but I mean, you've seen so many men and women. What would be a good
well,
example
you know,
to...
I think you hit it right on the nail, which is, and I think that's why this book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, is so popular, because it does make it playful. Mm. Right in the middle, I could be with my wife, and she's talking, and I'm giving solutions, and you can feel this tension building up, and she says, you know, she's getting a little upset with me. Right then I can go, oh, you know, I'm doing my Martian thing right now, solving problems. I guess I should just back off. Let's just start all over. And that's a really powerful tool just in itself, starting over.
Right.
And for the man particularly to go, you know, I think I just made a blunder here, a Martian blunder. Let me start over with this. Let me try listening. That's what you really want, isn't it? And suddenly it's not
huge,
like...
Huge big smile now across from
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, you know. Yeah. And a thing women do, this is what some women have told me, that way they've used this Martian-Venusian concept to make it easier, is they'll be in a tension with their husband, and then she can just go, you know, honey, I'm just being really Venusian. You don't have right. to make sense out of what right. I'm saying. You don't have to say anything. I just need to get this out, and I'll be so much happier, and you're doing such a good job. That's all she has to do. And here's another one, which is playful and funny, which women do, and my wife even just. If you say to a guy, and he's having a hard time, maybe you're in a little tense situation, if she says, I know this is really hard for you. This is, you know, probably the hardest thing for a Martian. And here you are trying to do it for me. I thank God for that you're willing to try this. A guy goes, okay. See, men do not mind doing a difficult job as long as somebody acknowledges.
And appreciates it.
And appreciates. Somebody says, I know this is tough for you, and I really appreciate that you're trying to do it.
Yes.
One time my wife said to me, she even said, John, I even know you don't understand a word I'm saying, but at least you're trying, and at least you're not getting mad at me. And then she broke into tears, and I just held her. It was so sweet.
Wow.
I was actually in this room right over there. I was going on and on. I was listening and listening, and I couldn't make sense of it. And another woman would, let me qualify. But I was like always in this,
now,
so what do you want me to do about
another,
it?
Why would another woman understand it?
Because they think that way. They're not always trying to think to what's the point. What do you want me to do about it? See, whenever you talk about a problem, a man's always thinking, you must be talking about this for a solution. Women talk about problems and issues not necessarily to cause a solution, just so somebody says, you have a right to feel the way you feel. I understand what you're going through.
The solution is the talking.
It's not even a solution. Again, we're Martians trying to make sense out of the whole thing. It's, you know.
Well, they feel better, though, as a result of this, right?
Let me give you an example.
The process
they feel
makes
better.
Them feel better.
The process makes them feel better. But let's just say you just did the best deal of your life.
Right.
The one of your greatest goals was just achieved, and you found out on a phone call. What's the first thing you want to do?
Celebrate.
You want to celebrate.
Yeah.
Who do you want to talk to about it?
My wife.
First thing you do is you want to call her, or you want to celebrate with her.
Right.
Men, that's the same thing I'm saying. When men achieve a goal, the first thing we want to do is share it.
Right.
And in sharing
because
it with
that
her.
Because that magnifies it.
That's right. In sharing with her, we are happier. Right?
Right. Right.
Well, women, they share their problems. They share their suffering. And if you suffer with them, they're happy.
Oh my gosh. Now,
we should
have a woman in this room to help see whether this is really true or not. I've seen what you've done.
Well, even with men, you know, if you've had a really awful day, let's say you're complaining about some big problem that just happened, and we're in the same business, and so we really understand each other. I go, I know just what you mean. Today, the same thing happened to me. You're going to feel relief.
Right.
Just because somebody else is feeling what you're feeling.
Right.
And that's what we're
not alone.
Looking
you're
for.
Basically not
you're
alone.
You're not alone.
Yeah.
And we men can relate to that. But it's the primary source of fulfillment for a woman is when she feels connection. And when the primary source of depression for a woman is feeling alone. See, if a man feels alone, that sometimes motivates him to get out there and do something. It's like, nobody's on my side. I better get out there and do something.
Wow.
But for a woman, the primary source of depression is isolation and feeling alone.
And not being heard is the essence of that.
That's right. Because today, particularly today, it's through communicating that women feel that you're with them. And it doesn't matter whether they're communicating a goal that they achieved or a problem that they're experiencing. It's who they are. The more inside of them comes out and you hear it.
Right.
Okay. It's like when you hear what she's saying, you're going into her. You're filling her up. You are understanding her.
Well, now you got men willing to do this.
That's right. It's very much like sex, isn't it?
Oh, I know how to do that. Yes, right. I can be successful at that.
We can fill her up. Okay. But the thing is for us to just see it's going into her world that fulfills her connection. But what a woman needs to understand, going into a man's world, certainly sometimes we want that, but primarily what we want for women is to go into our world enough to say, look what a great job you're doing. It's like when I paint the fence or something, I want my wife to say to the neighbors when they're walking by, oh, my husband painted that fence. And I go, yep, I painted that fence, you know? Or you take her to a wonderful resort, the way she can love you is to say, Tony, this resort is fantastic. I love this place. And what you're feeling inside is, yep, I brought her here. Okay, this is my resort.
Why do men want credit for things? Women say that a lot. I've heard them ask me in relationship seminars.
Right.
Why do men always have to have the credit?
Because men receive love through what they do.
Right.
So if I did it, if I can take credit for it, then the love comes in. If I don't take credit for it, some other guy gets credit. And that's even part of why men don't stop and get directions. They don't want this guy getting credit for getting there. I'm driving the car. I want to get credit for bringing her
there.
Well,
that must be tough when they come home and say, well, John Gray taught me what's wrong with you, for example. I listened to this tape with Tony Robbins. He told me that other guy is getting the credit.
Well, I think, you know, again, the information is not to try to change your partner. It's the information is to love your partner. What women need to understand is if their husbands are going around the block several times and she feels like, honey, why don't you stop and ask directions? He knows he can stop and ask directions. He's not a dumbbell. He's trying to prove to you that he can do it.
He's competent.
And if you just back off and know that not saying anything at that moment is the equivalent of a guy going out and buying flowers for her without her having to say anything about it.
But it's not only not saying at that moment, but afterwards not saying, see, I told you so.
Well, you know, this is some wisdom here. I want to go with that one, which is I was driving a new car I had, and we went on a driving vacation that was wonderful. And we were driving on the 4th of July, and my wife said, you know, John, I don't think you should be speeding. There's lots of policemen out today. You shouldn't be speeding. And I went, I'm driving fine. I'm a safe driver. Well, 10 minutes later, I got a ticket. Okay. Now, I got my ticket. I got back in the car. And
you were bracing yourself at this moment. Right. You knew what was coming, didn't
okay,
you?
Okay, here it's coming. And she did not say anything. And we just changed the subject and talked about anything. And the whole time, because she didn't say anything, I'm going, what a wife I have. Okay, I'm just feeling, oh, this is great. I mean, it helped my mood pick up quite fast that she didn't say anything. Then 2 days later, I went to her. I said, now, honey, I just want to acknowledge I got the ticket the other day. And 10 minutes before, you said this was not a good day to be speeding. And if there's anything you want to say about it, this is your time to say it. I said, I know
only Dr. Gray would do this.
Well, any man
I'm
will
impressed.
Do it 2 days later, because I know it's inside of her. You know, she carried
it's still
that around.
There. I know, I would have been bracing it. I know it's going to come out someplace.
It's going to come out anyway, so let her, just when I was
so
ready.
So you're ready for it.
I was finally ready for it. Now it could come out.
So what happened? What'd you say?
She said, I told you so. My intuition. If you would just listen to my intuition more, you wouldn't have these problems. Okay. Now we know. She needed that. And so,
so you quickly looked in her direction.
I looked in her direction. Well, I even gave her permission. And this is another thing with men. See, men many times wait to have conversations with women until there's just this huge distance, you know. There's like distance grows. Men think, well, you know, she'll work it out just like I can work it out on my own. But when a woman tends to be pulling away, I call it the cold front comes in. You know, suddenly there's not all this warm sunshine weather, you know. The clouding and it's getting cold front. And what men tend to do at those times is not bring up issues. The last thing they want to do is bring up issues to make it worse.
They go back to their own cave.
They go back to their own cave. Figure.
She'll work on it. I'll work on it. We'll come back together. It'll be fine.
That's
but it doesn't
right.
work that
it
way.
It doesn't work that way at all. When my wife tends to be, and I suggest for any man, when your wife tends to be pulling away or distant, that's the time to initiate a conversation. And if we go by our instincts, that's the last time we're going to want to have a conversation. I mean, who wants to walk into a tornado?
Right.
You know, you can get hurt there. But if you know how to duck and dodge, and the first thing you do is you go over, you initiate the conversation. You say, is there something wrong? And many times she'll say, oh, nothing. Oh, no, no, it's fine.
If a man stops there, he's in deep trouble.
That's right.
Because he hasn't proven he really does care because he would dig deeper, right?
That's right. That's right. If he loves her, he'll dig deeper. But most men love her, but they take her literally. They go, Okay, I don't have to talk about it. Great. I'll go back and watch some TV. So what you have to know is sometimes when a woman says nothing's wrong, something's wrong. And what he's supposed to do is pause and just hang out there with her and just say, well, was it something that happened today? No, it wasn't something today. And, well, was it something I did?
So you go on a fishing expedition.
That's right. You go on a fishing expedition. Thank you. I'll use
that metaphor. Try to translate that for men.
That's right. You go to fish. You have to fish.
So you're infecting me with metaphors.
No, I'm benefiting from it. It's great. But we do. We have to start fishing around. If you're a loving husband, then you'll fish around. And just the fact you keep fishing will start taking away some of her upset.
Because it shows you care.
Right. What women have told me is if a woman's upset with a man and he initiates the conversation, 50% of her upset will go away. If she has to initiate the conversation, it's like she has to pump the whole thing up to say, well, even if he doesn't care, I'm still going to tell him.
So then she probably makes it worse than it even was when she was thinking about it initially.
Right. It gets escalated because she feels she's communicating with somebody that won't listen, someone who doesn't care, someone who can't even see that she needs to talk and he won't even talk. But he sees a woman who's upset or pulling away and just gives her space because that's what he would want if he was upset. But the mistake women make is they see a guy pulling away. They panic. They go, okay, I got to go find out what's the matter. I got to get him talking.
Or he's going to leave, or he's not going to be part of it.
Or he's going to be hurt, you know, or he's not going to feel I love him.
So part of it is that we all tend to try and meet the other partner's needs the way our needs would be met, instead of forgetting, or instead of remembering, I should say, that we have completely different ways of meeting those needs. Because we have the same needs. We need for love, the need for connection, but we get it in a different way.
We get it in different ways many times. Sometimes we get it in the same way, but many times it's very different. Particularly, let's explore this one. We talked about women in cold fronts and storms, whatever. Men, when they're upset, the last thing we want to do when we're really upset is talk to somebody, particularly somebody we love, because we might be mean to them. You know, you say things that you regret when
the dragon comes out.
Yeah, the dragon comes out. So what men will instinctively do is pull away and do some kind of activity to allow them to temporarily forget whatever's bothering them.
Just to break the pattern. So
that's
come back to it fresh.
Break the pattern.
So what will they do?
So a man will
play tennis.
He could go to a movie, he could watch the news, he could read a magazine. But if he's in the home, what she's going to feel is he's completely ignoring her.
Or it's not important.
And the message she gets is she's not important.
Right.
She thinks he's not even dealing with the issue. But the truth
is... Well, he's not.
Well, that's what I have to tell you. He is dealing with it, but in his way. He's putting it off until he feels better. Then he can look at it again.
So he's in a better state where he can come up with a better solution.
Right. It's the same form. It's magnified, but everybody does this to some extent. When you're stressed out, what do? You go on a vacation. You go on a vacation, you don't do work on your vacation. So all your working part of your brain relaxes. Another part of your brain is enjoying. You're coming back to happiness.
Well, you say a relationship is hard work and a vacation.
That's right. It should be both. It should be both.
So what does that mean in terms of a relationship?
Well, first of all, to finish the point with men, everybody knows a vacation. If you go on a vacation, forget your problems. When you come back, you're much more capable of solving your problems. So it's not running away from your problems.
Okay.
It's dealing with your problems. And that's what men are doing practically every day. We go on vacation when we get home. Okay, that's our instinct. If you think about it, what has the home always been for men? It's been a vacation spot. We worked out there and we came home to rest.
But now women are out there working too and they're coming home.
But to them it's not a vacation spot. They feel it's a place where they have to do double the work they've ever done in the past.
Right.
They don't have the time, the hours or whatever, and they don't have the help from the man because he's doing what his father did. He went to work, he comes home to rest and relax and be on vacation to a certain extent.
So now no one gets a vacation anymore, basically.
Nobody's happy. I mean, that's why there's so much divorce today. She's coming home looking to have someone take care of her. He's coming home having someone to take care of his needs. Women are saying, I want to come home and have a wife greet me at the door.
Right.
Dinner's
absolutely
made.
True.
The children are happy. The house is clean. You
wouldn't
come home.
You
sit there. Wouldn't that be great? And every woman deserves that. Every man deserves that. So how do we get to that place? Well, the reality is we have to start understanding each other's points of view better.
This session continues on the next CD.
What happens now in my relationship as opposed to 10 years ago is when I come home from work and I'm the big CEO, what I come home from work is I look to check to see if the trash needs to be empty. First, I greet my wife if she's there. Look in her direction, ask her about her day, give her a hug, listen to see anything. Once I've done that, communication first, okay?
Okay.
Then romance is the next important thing, which is if the house isn't filled with flowers, there's always flowers in my house. Hmm. I've learned. If I want romance, there needs to always be flowers. And this is what men have to know about flowers, because men go, oh, okay, always flowers, we'll get some potted plants. There's no potted plants in my house. It's cut flowers. Romance is cut flowers that will die in 5 days. It has to die.
So you show you've recommitted each time.
That's right. Each time you're recommitted. See, guys,
man looks for the efficient solution.
That's right.
I'll just get myself something that'll be there for now on. I won't have to work at it anymore.
Yeah. You know, sometimes when I say that, women go, oh, he understands this woman so much. But this is through life experience here. I've tried every wrong thing possible. I told my wife once, I said, you know, honey, why don't you get the flowers? You're at the grocery store today anyway, and they're much cheaper. Does not work. And see, what makes it romantic, because I go buy the flowers, we put them in the vase, they're cut flowers, they die in 5 or 6 days. I'm supposed to notice and go out and get some more. And that's the whole thing, is that women want to see that we notice, that we see their needs and we make them important.
And you make effort. It's also important that you made an effort to do it.
That's right, effort. Women today want to see men effort. We're sitting in front of my fireplace, and I remember right here, you see the wood right out front.
Right.
So we were moving into this house and we were doing some redecorating, and my wife was saying she wanted this and she wanted that and she wanted lights over here. And I was saying yes to everything because I had one thing on my mind. That fireplace, I wanted to have a little switch. You turn the switch and it would automatically light. That was my idea. Okay, we're going to get it so I don't have to go out and carry those logs anymore and build a log fire. So here I am, I'm saying to her, I'm going, so honey, so what else would you like? She said all these things. And I said, well, that sounds really good. I think we can have all that. And there's one thing I'd like. And she said, oh, what's that, John? And I said, well, you know, this fireplace, it's a really wonderful fireplace. And I was thinking that we could hook up a gas into this with one of those switches that would just ignite it automatically. And she goes, and she's a very smart lady, she goes, well, that's a good idea.
That was the right response.
That's right. That's a good idea. I could see that would be much easier, wouldn't it? I went, yeah, that would be a lot easier. We'd have a lot more fires if it was that simple and automatic. And she goes, yeah, I know what you mean. And I'm thinking inside, okay, I got the gas fireplace with the button. And then she says, but you know, John, there's something that goes on inside of me, something I feel when I see you carrying in those heavy logs and building that fire. It's like a fire inside of myself. I went, darn it, okay.
This woman is good.
She is good.
She is good.
I tell you, she had that one down.
Lights my fire if you carry the logs in. Yeah. You're out there chopping wood the next 5 minutes.
Right. So then I thought, okay, next thing, once we moved into this house, then we have a guy that helps us outside, and we'll call him Bill. I asked Bill to bring all the logs in and have them set up so I would never have to carry the logs in and set them up. Within a month, she was telling me all about Bill's history and how much she liked Bill and what a fine person Bill was, and she doubled his salary. And so I started realizing, you know, I thought to myself, Bill's getting the credit for bringing those logs in there. Now, the way a Martian thinks about this is I want to say, hey, but I'm paying Bill to do this. Doesn't matter. It's who toils for the woman, okay? So that's what we then have to realize. So no matter how successful we are, we can hire people to do things or whatever, that takes romance away. That's romance is when the woman sees the man taking that effort for her, okay? Whereas many men who are very successful, they'll give their heart and soul to their audiences, they'll make a lot of money, they'll come home and they'll be exhausted and tired.
Right.
But the woman will have a beautiful home and all these wonderful things, and he's thinking, but I provided all this for you. But she feels, you give it all to them. I get nothing of you.
Right.
And that's what the woman wants, is the man, and who he is his attention. This is something that took me years to find out. Because we used to do interviews, and the press would ask my wife, they're always saying, what's the most romantic thing your husband does? You know, what's the most romantic thing he does? And she says, the most romantic thing is when he gives me his full attention.
Hmm.
That was it. And it's just, women crave a man's full attention.
How does a woman get a man's full attention?
Well, one is sex, of course. If she enjoys sex, his attention is going to be more in her direction. And why is sex so important? Because it's a woman when she's happy. So when a woman gives a man the message, he can make her happy, his attention goes to her.
Right.
The reason men who are in love with their wives gradually, you can see them in restaurants. You can see who's dating, who's married. The married men are kind of looking in different directions, you know. But a guy who's dating is looking right at the woman. And part of that is he's horny and he's looking at her. But another part of it is he has the experience that, I can give this woman what she needs, or maybe I can give her what she needs. And when the communication breaks down in a relationship where a woman talks and a man says things and it's not the right thing, and he starts to realize when she's talking, there's nothing I can do. I really don't know how to make this woman happy. His attention starts going away from her.
Right.
Whenever a man feels he can be successful with a woman, his attention will go to her.
Or wherever he feels he can be successful, his attention goes.
Right, that's where his attention goes, which is why many men's attention goes back to work.
And the truth is, that's also happening for women today, because we've talked about this. I remember when I first started reading your work, I thought, there's a lot of generalizations here, you know? But I've seen those generalizations be so valuable, but it's important to see the exception also, that women, when they feel like they can't win with a man, well, they're going to turn and they're going to find some other avenue for that. And what a lot of women are doing is adopting the Martian strategy today, entering another world where a different set of rule structures are. Tell me about a little bit about what is the workplace and the roles that men and women are playing today. How is that adding to the conflict, or is it making things better? What is your perspective?
Well, let me also qualify the whole book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, in that when I wrote that book, there was another chapter in that book which dealt with the exceptions.
Oh, really?
Which is men who are more on their sensitive side and women who are more on their Martian side.
Sure.
And that they're all over the place, too.
And it happens moment to moment to a certain extent.
And you're right.
And
it does happen moment to moment. But my publishers, and it was a good decision, they said, leave that out of this book so you're making one point in this book, and then write another book on that subject. And so that subject is in my book, What Your Mother Couldn't Tell, Your Father Didn't Know, which I call emotional role reversal, which is where women are going more to their Martian side.
Right.
Men will tend to go more to their feminine side. And it's they're shifting the traditional role is what I mean by
exactly.
that. And my answer to that in brief is that if you want passion to last in a relationship, you need to always be seeking balance. If you're in balance, passion will go away.
Clarify what you mean by that.
What I mean is, a man goes too much to his feminine, or a woman goes too much to her masculine, she can be successful in her life, he can be fulfilled in his life, but the passion between man and woman will become less and less over time.
Well, that's because you talk a little bit about the attraction of polarity.
Yeah, that's the attraction. Polarity comes. Women are instinctively attracted to masculinity. The female is attracted to masculinity. The masculine is attracted to the feminine. And men are born masculine. Women are born feminine with a masculine side. Men are born masculine with a feminine side. As we move towards wholeness, as you've grown in mastery in your own life, your own feminine side is naturally developed.
Sure.
It's when a man feels secure in himself that he can let his feminine side come out.
Right.
But if a man doesn't feel good about his masculine side and then purposely goes to his female side, then he can be a loving, sensitive guy, but he finds that he doesn't have the courage to go after his goals.
Right.
See, the courage to go after your goals, to be willing to put up with all the obstacles and pick yourself back up again and again, that's the male side. The female side is to be in relationship and to be loving and to be nurturing, and when you feel rejected, to love again.
Right.
See, that's the, as I mentioned before in the earlier part.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness. Women's biggest issue is to forgive. Men's is to take responsibility, apologize. You know, if a guy does a job and it doesn't work, somebody else is making more money, he can be a victim, or he can say, okay, let me look at what my mistakes are. How can I regroup myself? How can I come back, change my formula, do something better? That's the male side.
Right.
Women need to learn that as well. But on the female side, the biggest lesson in life for women is the forgiveness.
You gave us how a man can apologize and how a man can really see he's responsible. How does a woman really forgive?
Okay, the primary way for women to understand their forgiveness is a forgiveness response inside of both men and women. But primarily, it's the lesson for women to learn most, as I'm pointing out here. Forgiveness response happens through the sharing of feelings. Generally, when your partner's done something to hurt you, and women can feel hurt, or anybody can feel hurt if they feel rejected, minimized, unimportant, some argument happens, the man says mean things. Women tend to remember this stuff, and it builds up and builds up. And that's another difference. Men don't remember it as much as women. Certainly we can hold on to things, but women really have a great memory for this stuff. And so it's hard for them to open up and trust again unless they forgive. And that forgiveness, it's an automatic built-in response, which just to make a note, I've written a book. My first book was written about forgiveness, called What You Feel, You Can Heal.
Right.
When you can feel your hurt, which is keeping you from forgiving, you know, somebody hurt me, I'm not going to forgive them. Really, forgiveness is letting go of that hurt. So she needs to become an expert at letting go of her hurt. And the primary way for women to let go of hurt is through sharing and communicating what's hurting them. So there's basically three emotions, the primary emotions, what you're angry about or frustrated about or dissatisfied with. Mm-hmm. You know, I call them the hot emotions, okay? What you don't like. And then there's the softer side, the wet emotions, the sadness, disappointment, grief, hurt, the tender, more tender. And then you get to the fear emotions, which is, I'm afraid I'm not loved, afraid I'll never be loved, afraid if I open up, I'll be hurt again, afraid he doesn't really care, afraid I'm not good enough, all those fear kind of emotions. Whenever there's a hurt inside, generally linked to that hurt is anger, sadness, and fear. And if she can take some time to write out her feelings, what makes her angry, what makes her sad, what she's afraid of, and if there's anything she feels sorry about, she can toss that in too after she's expressed those three. Then she writes out what she wants, what she wishes, what she needs.
That's the secret, because otherwise you just keep processing the same feelings.
That's the secret right there. So you get in touch with what you want. Because that's really one of the roles negative emotions have. Negative emotions are there to help us get in touch with what we want, what we wish, what we need. They're energy. It's like saying, I'm not getting what I want.
It's a call to action.
That's
really.
Right. It's a call
but
to action.
People often just stay in them.
Right. So the idea here is to move through them.
Right.
Not deny them, not stay in them, but acknowledge them, feel them, and move through them. And when a woman feels someone really is listening to her, she'll naturally move through those range of feelings. If you stay stuck in one, you tend to stay stuck forever in that one. So if you're always angry, you want to ask yourself, what are your disappointments? What is your sadness? If you're always afraid, what are you angry about?
Right.
So you want to make sure a little bit of all three of those emotions, and then you get back in touch with what you want, what you wish, what you need. Then there's another exercise I ask women to do for forgiveness. Once you're back to how you wanted that to be, how you wish it could be, what you really need from your partner, then pretend in your imagination, in your visualization. I suggest writing it out. Write, after you've written out your feelings, write the response that you wish your husband would respond to you with.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that you've just shared these feelings to him, then write the response that you would like him to give to you. And once it's like, I'm hurt, and now the husband comes to her or their boyfriend, whoever, comes to you and says, I'm sorry. Right. I hurt your feelings. I understand why I hurt you. I was insensitive. I was inconsiderate, and I really don't want to do that again. I love you so much. You're so special. She writes out what she would want to hear. Then the forgiveness response is automatic.
Because she actually, your brain doesn't know the difference between something you vividly imagine and something you actually experience. So by experiencing that, it's as if he actually did it.
Right.
And then a man, it sounds like, could really help a woman to forgive more easily if when she shares these feelings, he doesn't take it personally. He doesn't feel like I'm wrong. He doesn't feel attacked. And instead, he's able to look at her direction and give the noises. But sincerely, really appreciate what she's feeling and not feel like he has to change it.
Yeah, and that he is doing his best to understand. He's doing his best to be supportive of her. And I'm just saying this for men. All you have to do is just suffer through listening. It is hard. This is not an easy job to do. And my statement to men is, you're going to suffer anyway. Why not choose to suffer?
I feel like you're in control of it.
And I'm not talking about all the time. You know, we're focusing on a lot of the negative things in relationships here. But if you can handle those things, everything else goes quite wonderful.
Tell me that. Okay. What is the purpose of a relationship?
All right. Well,
why do we have relationships? What's the good side?
Well, let's look at how relationships have changed in the last 30 years. Relationships between men and women were primarily a agreement, a sacred agreement, a partnership of men and women. Men did men's work, women did women's work for the purpose of securing the family. Security and survival were the primary reasons men and women got together. Just like almost like a business deal out there to make money. But it wasn't like that. There was love, but it was all around of protecting each other and security, raising a family so as we got older, our kids would take care of us and they would protect us. And it was a real partnership. And it worked when it worked because women knew what they had to do. Men knew what they had to do. Women didn't want men that they had to tell what to do. And men didn't want to feel like they had to tell women what to do because they didn't know how to do it anyway. So there was two different worlds and they're very, very separate.
Right.
And their partnership, and it worked as long as there was security. Security and survival. Now, today, with technological advances, men and women are independent and autonomous for all practical reasons.
Right.
A man, for all the things he needed a woman for example, and traditionally to make a home and raise his children, he can hire somebody to do that. Okay, make dinner, restaurants are everywhere, people to clean your house, people to raise your children, everything's there. So divorce is so easy. That's one of the reasons there is so much divorce. A man can do it himself, or a woman can do it herself. She can go out and have her job. She doesn't need a man. She doesn't need to depend on him for security or for survival. She's got the police. She's got 911. She's got alimony checks.
She doesn't even need him to get pregnant anymore.
That's right. She doesn't need him to get pregnant. So, you know, one woman said to me, she says, you know, men are a luxury. They're not a necessity. Okay. Now, there's no man that's ever going to be attracted to her, I promise you. Okay. And that's what she was asking me. Why don't I have a man in my life? I said, well, if they're luxuries and not necessities, men are going to be drawn in those areas, always where they can be most successful. And when you need somebody, You go, and they do something for you. You go, thank you so much. You got a lot of love, a lot of appreciation. But women don't need men the way they used to need men. What do women need men for today? That's the whole secret here. And what can men do for women today? Why does a man even want a woman today? Well, why do men and women get together in the first place? Attraction.
Right.
And what's all that attraction about? Men are looking for women's love. Women are looking for a man's love. They're not looking for the money. They're not looking for the survival. They're not looking for security. They're looking for love. And never in history has the prime reason for a relationship been love.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting, because what that does is it opens up a door where romance truly can be lasting. Passion truly can be lasting. This is something most people aren't aware of because they just see Hollywood movies about history in many cases. If you study the history of relationships in all cultures, I mean all cultures, no exception, romance has never been a part of marriage. You never even looked to your marriage to make you happy in a romantic way. Men traditionally went outside the relationship, and women traditionally didn't find it anywhere.
Why? I mean, because why traditionally was it done? I remember you started one of your books. I'm trying to remember which one, but the question that was the very first paragraph was, can a passion survive in a monogamous relationship? So the question is, why were they going outside the relationship for that? And what's the answer to that question? How do you create that?
When the purpose of a relationship is based upon security, passion is not important. Mm. And the rules that created security, which is men did men's work, women do women's work, did not allow intimacy to take place. Mm-hmm. Without intimacy, you can't have passion.
Right.
Intimacy occurs as men start to enter into the woman's world. Same thing in sex is what happens in passion. You don't have a lot of passion unless you can enter into the woman's world and do something to make her happy. So now as men
and she feels that you've entered into her world.
That's right. And she feels you've entered and he's being appreciated for entering in. Then he pulls away. Then he goes back in, pulls away. And this is what women have to understand. It's always going to be the dance of men in relationship. We hunger for women. We want to get close to women. And after a while, we back off. And women think, oh, he's afraid of intimacy. He's not necessarily afraid of intimacy. He's just pulling back to come back to his world. Remember what he's like.
His cave.
Do his cave thing. Go for a drive in his car. Go out with the guys. Go to a football game. Do guy things, Martian things. Then once he's feeling real good in his masculine, naturally starts hungering for the feminine again. Then he goes back into the female world. And so it's healthy for men to go in, come out. Go in, come out. And why is it healthy for women? Very important for women as well to not always be glommed onto a man. Because women have a tendency, when they love a man, to connect with him, solely him. All their thing goes to him. And then that's very unhealthy because
they lose their identity.
They lose their identity. Right. It's like somebody comes into your life and takes over. So when he pulls back, that's a chance for her, with all his love that he left, that he gave to her, to love herself, have friends, to share, to have her contribution to society. She has to have her life. And he's like a guest into her life. He goes out, comes back in, goes back out. And just as in sex, that's what creates passion. In marriage, that's what creates passion. And up until the last 30 years, men never went into women's worlds. See, men never went in there. Hmm. Okay? Men stayed in the men's world, women stayed in the women's world. So it's this whole communication thing, right, which opens the door for romance.
Right.
Okay. Now, I talked earlier about three stages that we can see in the next millennium of what's going to happen in male-female relationships. The first is communication will improve, and it is starting to improve. And that's this huge breakthroughs couples are having. Immediately the relationship turns around once they start understanding what these differences are and how to work with the differences. Because, you know, Tony, even though 50 years ago, everybody knew that men and women were different, they didn't understand what those differences were.
Right.
They didn't understand how male and female psychology ticked. Okay. Now by understanding it, and as women are suddenly feeling this need for emotional intimacy, and men are feeling a greater need for emotional intimacy as well. It's just for most men, the form it takes is sex.
Right.
So a huge hunger for sex in our society. Everybody's interested in sex. Sex is everywhere. Look on TV now. I mean, sex is all over TV.
Magnet.
It is just all over. And the reason is there is because it sells, it gets people's attention. Men are looking for sex. But when men are looking for sex, and this is what women have to know, what they're really looking for is love. Is this the way? When men are turned on, that's when their heart starts to open.
Well, let's transition to that, because I don't want to finish this tape without covering
that
subject.
Okay.
So let's talk about it. Let's talk about sex. What is it that men want with sex, and what is it that women want? How does that differ?
Okay, well, the first two words, the first sentence of Mars and Venus in the Bedroom is men want sex, women want romance. Okay, now, that can be interpreted all different kinds of ways, and let me explain what I mean by that. Is it if you
But they both want love.
They both want love.
But the vehicle they use is
right.
different.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
And they don't understand. They think the other person's vehicle is the wrong vehicle.
That's right. Okay. For example, in the first few years of my marriage with Bonnie, I used to go away and teach my seminars. And, you know, I used to have longer seminars. By the way, I only do short ones now because I don't want to be away that long.
Quick, I can't let my wife hear this tape.
But she comes with me,
so it works out.
That's right. So I would go away. And when I would come home, the first thing I wanted to do was have sex. Okay? I mean, I missed her the whole time. I mean, as a matter of fact, the longer I'm away, the more horny I'm getting. So I'm coming home. I can't wait to find her and go have sex. And her reaction, when we were dating, it was different. She was always happy to have sex. Whatever. But once we're married and we're living together and kids and I'm traveling, I'd come home and I want to have sex. And she says, "Sex? Is that all you want? Sex? Don't you even care about what I went through in the last 3 or 4 days? You haven't even talked to me." And I went, "Well, sure I care, but I'd rather have sex than hear about it. I mean, that's honest." But see, from the woman's point of view, and this was her point of view, she explained it to me. She says, "John, I can't just open up myself to you. You've been away. I need to share, get closer. I need some romance. I need to feel you love me. I need to get reacquainted." I went, "Reacquainted? You've known me for 6 years. What's going on here?" You know. But for many women, they're nodding their head when I tell this story. They say, "Yeah, we need to get reacquainted. We need to connect again. We need that intimacy to happen." And it's like those cut flowers. They die. You have to replace them. You know, every week you need to hear what's going on in her life. Right. She needs the emotional stimulation. She needs to communicate so her heart opens first. Then she becomes. The energy then goes down, and then she can really enjoy sex. If a woman doesn't feel loved, heard, seen, romance, certainly she could have sex before that, but she's not going to fully enjoy it. For a woman to really hunger for sex, she needs to feel loved. For a man to truly hunger for romance, and many men do hunger for romance. Many men want to create romance. I love creating romantic events for my wife, okay? But it's because
if it makes her happy.
Because it makes her happy.
That's right.
And because I know we're going to have sex. And I know we have great sex. You know, right. Sex is a big part of it. You know, it's always there at the end of a romantic evening. You know, I got the whole thing planned, but we still have our place where it's going to happen. You know, if I'm on a mountain walk, I remember I'm bringing a blanket, you know, so we can get down on something. I mean, she made that real clear to me. We don't do it outside unless there's a blanket, you know. So she even sees me bring the blanket.
You guys taking notes on this? Pretty important.
Right.
So tell me specifically, what does a man need to do to drive a woman crazy? And what does a woman need to do to drive a man crazy intimately, sexually?
Okay, that's a great one. Just to start with, again, the difference between men and women there. Because
right.
a lot of where I started with this material is before I got into teaching about relationships between men and women and sex, I was actually a celibate monk for 9 years.
I want to make sure that people know that about you. One of my questions, and I'll throw it in here and let you respond to it where it makes sense, is how much of your life history, the 20 years of working with men and women, but also your background as a monk, your past relationships, your current relationships, how much of that has shaped this incredible understanding you have about the sexes? I mean, it's true. You're like this intergalactic gender translator.
Right. You know? Well, so. You know, ironically, I think where that came from is I grew up in a family of 6 boys and 1 girl. And I hardly knew my sister. I know her quite well. But right. then it was like she was off limits. She had locks on her door and everything. 6 Martians running around out of control. So I really knew Martians quite well. And then I went off at 19, I went off to become a monk. And
wow.
so I was not in relationships with women at all. So I was with men primarily. And,
right.
and I did a lot of introspective work, which many men don't do. For 9 years, looking at myself, looking at what right. makes me tick. So I really knew men and I knew myself very well. So when I started having relationships with women around 28, I had them as a teenager, but then I stopped as a monk. Women really were like from another planet. I mean, it was like, wow, this is really different from me. This is different from me.
Right.
And for the first few years, I was bent upon rehabilitating women. Fixing them.
That's right.
So they would be like me and they wouldn't have all these worries and distresses. We'd
right.
have these conversations that we both agreed upon.
Right.
But you see, I was making the huge mistake of a man looking at a woman in distress and explaining to her, "If you think the way I think, if you do what I do, then right. you'll be happy." Instead, what happened to me is I was actually married. I was married before. In my first marriage, what I was doing was this guy, clearly knowing what works for me, trying to change this woman, explaining to her how she should change.
Right.
And then she'd be happy and I'd be happy and we'd both be happy. And it was just frustration, frustration, frustration.
That's great.
And what had happened was I'd been this monk for 9 years and growing spiritually, a lot of meditation, introspective work. But then it was time for me. I just sort of grew up, I felt, through that process. And I now had to find my place in in the world. What was my niche? It wasn't to teach meditation. Other people do it wonderfully.
Right.
Something was coming out of me, and I didn't know what it was. All I knew is I had to get on a plane, go out to California. And I just followed my feelings. I went out to California. I arrived there. I thought some miracle was going to happen. Somebody was going to meet me at the gate or something. Nobody was there. And I had hardly any money. I spent that year. That was the most suffering year of my life. I had no money. I was traveling around. I didn't have an old broken down car. And I traveled around visiting lots of women. And that's what did change, is suddenly women became very important. And I remember finally getting to a place where I was staying, and there's this woman I met, and she had also been a nun for many years, and she was leaving that as well. And here I am, this celibate guy, and she was a massage therapist. So she said, "Would you like a massage?" And I said, "Sure." And she says, "Well, you have to take off all your clothes." And I blushed, you know. I'd been naked in front of a woman 9 years, so,
right.
So I laid down, and she started massaging me, and it was in the massage that she said to me, she says, "So why are you celibate?" And for the first time in 9 years, I had no answer. My mind was blank.
So I
thought about this a lot, and of course, actually, I acted. We went out to make love, and it was quite fantastic, and I really enjoyed it a lot. And I reevaluated, well, what was celibacy? And celibacy was, for me, a path of finding myself, preparing myself till I was ready for marriage or ready for an intimate relationship. And now I was ready, and it was time to explore what sex was, and that sex was a beautiful part of me. It was like I had to become so spiritual that I could see sex as something beautiful, holy, and spiritual. Because I really believe sex is something very spiritual if it's expressed with someone you love.
Right.
What so many people don't know is that when they're having sex with people they don't love, they're wasting their energy.
Right.
They're just, it's like having all these potent seeds and throwing them out. It's like having all your money and then going to Las Vegas and gambling and losing it all instead of investing it.
Right.
And if you don't have a woman to invest that with, then you hold on to it. It's like you put in a savings account till you find a good investment. And that's the woman that you love. And then when you have sex with a woman you love, then all that energy, that very potent, creative, powerful, passionate energy goes towards someone who loves you. So it all comes back to
right.
you.
It's magnified.
It's like looking in a mirror. You're putting it towards a mirror, it comes back to you. But if you're putting that energy towards a woman that doesn't love you, it doesn't come back to you.
Hmm.
If you put that energy into a fantasy woman, then it's just being dispersed. And all your energy is going towards fantasy instead of a real woman who loves you back.
Right.
And this is, you know, it's another one of my messages, and it's also about great sex, is for sex to get better and better over the years, which is another thing that historically has never happened. Even when men did fool around, they would keep fooling around with more and more women. Okay, it doesn't get better and better with one woman.
Right.
How do you get it better and better with one woman? Well, part of the thing here is passionate monogamy. Monogamy is actually one of the keys to keeping the passion alive. But traditionally, monogamy just meant you were in a jail sentence with someone that you weren't turned on to, but you didn't fool around. You know, and that's how people felt, you know, they couldn't have passion anymore. And people today, and this happens to, like, you'll see all these famous movie stars that had great marriages and they become really famous and
right.
then they break up. It's always because he's fooling around with other women.
Right.
And if you do the interviews, they'll say, I don't want to mention names, but everybody knows these names. They'll say, well, you know, here I am, finally made it. I've got all this money. All these women want me. When I was a teenager, no women wanted me. Now I have all these women wanting me. Why can't I enjoy the fruit of all this?
Right.
And what these men don't know is they can have all that times 10 with their wives. They don't have to go out and do this.
Why don't they believe that?
They don't have the experience of passion with their wives. They've lost the passion with their wives.
So how do they put that back in?
Okay.
How does anybody put that back in?
How does anybody put it back in? Well, two things. Let me first, so that as the basis of it is monogamy.
Okay.
Every time.
Because that creates connection and trust, and it creates a place where you can build something instead of starting over constantly.
Every time temptation is there. And what happens when temptation knocks, and if you're a guy, is your blood starts flowing down. It's a physiological response. It has nothing to do with whether you love your partner or not. The blood starts flowing. You're built to do this, okay? And there she is. She's beautiful. She's saying, ooh, you could make me happy tonight. And the guy's going, without thinking. See, there's parts of the brain that act without the brain. The
reptilian portion of the brain.
That's
exactly.
Right. The reptilian part. It just goes like that. The blood
and
starts flowing
And you start acting like
down,
a reptile.
And you start acting like, and you're feeling good. I mean, it feels good. And you start thinking to yourself, how could something that feels so good be bad?
Right.
Okay. And what I'm saying is not bad, but it's like wasting your energy.
Right.
Okay. It's not bad to go out and spend your money if you want to spend it. But if you don't have, you know, good investments, you're a fool.
Right.
Okay. But in this case, The energy starts moving down. The attraction is now turning into feeling really good. What monogamy means and what men can practice is mental monogamy. As soon as it's going over there, you just go, oh, okay, that would feel great. That's wonderful. Hey, I look down at yourself, glad the plumbing's working. I'm a Martian. And then what you do is now you start thinking about your wife. You start thinking about your soulmate. You think about her, and you think about having sex with her. You remember a time when sex was really great, and you take that energy, and you're thinking about your wife.
So you're actually anchoring it to your primary relationship.
That's right. You're anchoring it. And if you keep anchoring your arousal to your wife,
right,
then you'll always be aroused to your wife.
Right.
It's amazing. And so what happens is sex becomes easier and better and more passionate over right. the years.
Because it's stacked.
It's stacked on every one of those experiences. Right. And you know what? Also, what men don't know is every time temptation knocks and he thinks about his wife feels more loved. That makes her more passionately attracted to him. See, like...
Because
She picks it up non-verbally. Right. She picks it up on an intuitive level, whether she's there or not. If he's out fooling around, and men can do this as a survey, men that are fooling around, and they're thinking, well, I'm not really doing it. I'm not really having an affair. But just watch what your wife does that week while you're out there fooling around with all that flirtatious energy. Come home and observe whether you have any arguments that week. Observe what your relationship is like. Then practice 3 weeks where anytime temptation that you immediately think about your wife. You think about your wife. You bring your feelings back to your wife, and right. you'll see your relationship dramatically improves. And not only does your relationship improve, but your business improves. Everything in your life starts coming together. You watch these movie stars who leave their wives and start cheating. Their career starts going down. That right. doesn't mean it has to permanently go down. Right. It means once they come back to finding someone they love, and they send that energy towards someone they love, then they start building and building and building.
So tell me something, John, because A Date with Destiny, this is a theme that almost always shows up because we have people from so many different countries, so many different places. And since relationship's such a big issue, invariably there'll be a man or a woman get up and say, I'm here this weekend because I got to decide what to do. I've been cheating. You know, I'm in another relationship simultaneously, and I really love this person too, and I don't know how to decide. And they're really reinforced. They're getting rewards on both sides, but they're splitting their whole energy and their whole life. What do you say to them? And the other one issue that comes up, and I'm giving you both of these, so you might want to handle them together, is, so does a woman forgive or does a man forgive if a man or a woman does stray?
Well, let's handle the first one first,
okay?
Which is, how do you decide the ambivalence which is inside right. of us? And I'd like to explain where that ambivalence comes from. It's what happens is when a man is attracted to a woman, he's attracted to her. And then he'll naturally, after connecting for a little while, he'll pull away. Just as in sex, if you go in, there's an instinct that pulls out, and you right. want to go back in. Now, when a man pulls away emotionally from a woman, if he doesn't understand this is a normal process, then he'll think in his head, something's wrong with the relationship.
Because why am I pulling away? Why am I staying connected?
Why am I not continuing? Why am I not still up? You know, after right. sex, it goes down, okay? After intimacy, it goes down too. The emotional attraction lessens after a lot of intimacy for a man. Ironically, this doesn't happen in women. If you measure the pleasure hormones in men during sex, after a man has an orgasm, the pleasure hormones diminish immediately. It's gone, and you can see there's nothing he can do. Even to be touched in a sensitive area in his penis, to be touched there sometimes even hurts. Okay. Whereas a woman, after she's had an orgasm, continuing stimulation can actually take her to higher peaks of pleasure.
Right.
Her pleasure hormones are still up, they're still peaking, and they're still there. So maximum intimacy just opens her up more. But maximum intimacy for a man, he experiences it. It's like his hunger is satisfied.
It's a completion thing again. It's process versus completion
That's
to a
right.
certain extent.
Then he pulls away. He's achieved his goal. Now he comes back to center again. So he tends to pull back. Now men... particularly, they're looking for a mate, looking who would I want to settle down with. He's attracted to this woman. She's wonderful. She's great. Once he's gotten really close, he's going to pull away. While he's backing up, if he doesn't understand this is normal, natural, he's going to start becoming more critical. Well, she doesn't have this. Well, she doesn't have that. Well, maybe she's not the right one for me. At that moment, while he's doubting, if he doesn't stay monogamous to her, okay, during that doubting stage or pulling away stage, temptation is always there.
Right.
So then he gets involved over here.
Right.
So when he's pulling away from her, he's automatically going over to this other kind of woman, this other woman, and he's attracted to her. When he pulls back from her, then there's this woman he's pulling back to. So now he's going bouncing back and forth, back and forth. So what he needs to do is stick with one woman. Only be having sex with one woman. Having sex with two women over a period of time will completely confuse all of your inner messages, so you can't hear the tiny whisper in your heart that says, this is the woman for me. That's how you know you're with the right person. This is the woman for me. And I remember one man coming to me, same thing, you hear it all the time. Right. He says, John, my problem is I love women so much, you know, which one do I pick?
Right.
Okay. And it's like, what you do is you pick one. You just pick one and you stay committed to that relationship till you're clear that's not the person for me.
Or that they are.
Or that they are, right. And you hear a voice and you commit to
that. How is it different for women, though? You've used the example for men. What causes a woman then to stray in
this situation? The confusion for women, and what I'm talking about is picking the wrong person for women as well. The confusion for women is a man gets close, does certain things, woman goes, ooh, he could be the one to make me happy. The love comes in and helps her to define, is this the right man for me or not? And once he's there, she's starting to warm up to him. Then when he pulls away, for many women, when he pulls away, she feels insecure.
Right.
And in her insecurity, because she doesn't know this is a natural process.
Right. Why is he pulling away?
Many women...
And she may actually move forward to try and keep him from pulling away.
That's what I'm about to say.
And then he might feel smothered or...
That's right. That's one of the most common patterns. But also, in terms of what's going on inside of her, in her insecurity, because she doesn't understand the normal naturalness of him pulling away and the purpose of that, what she will then do is feel more insecure and try to win his love. She will then pursue him. And when a woman pursues a man, what she's doing is she's on her male side.
Right. And she's a little bit out of balance.
She's going out of balance.
If it's continuous.
That's right. When a woman pursues a man, then the man is now the one who's being pursued, and he stops pursuing her. Hmm. It's very hard for a man to feel those instincts inside that want to pursue her, that want to impress her, that want to provide for her, that want to win her over, in a sense, want to find the keys to the kingdom to get in. That's pursuing energy. That's what we want. What a woman needs to learn is to encourage in a man is the pursuing energy. But if she's pursuing him, it stops that energy. So
like,
now
he's, like men like that though sometimes, but it's the amount of time. Is that a fair representation?
If you interview single men, they love
an aggressive woman.
Aggressive women, but these men don't get married.
Interesting.
Okay.
And probably it doesn't last if they're continuously aggressive. They've lost their masculine side. They've lost their ability to be in that place.
You know, any man enjoys a woman saying, oh, you're wonderful, I want you, okay?
Right.
But the reality is, does that create in him a desire to want her so much that he's willing to make a commitment?
Right.
See, that takes a lot of pursuing energy. So a woman has to come back to the place of, instead of pursuing to try to get him to love her, she needs to come back to the place of, is he really the right person for me? Let me give him a chance and see if he can pursue me and win me over.
Also maybe not create the doubt, but to say this is, as you said, this is a natural process. His backing off is actually going to cause him to come back stronger, if you have that belief, potentially.
That's right. And you know what will happen if he backs off? There's a natural ambivalence that anybody would feel. You know, you're all hot and heavy, excited. This is the man I love. Then he pulls off. What's the natural thing to feel? Well, maybe he's not the right person.
Right.
Let me see. And that's what couples have to know. You can't find, it's like trying to find the perfect job in one date.
Right.
Give me a break, you know, to find your life mate. It takes time before you really get to feel a message inside your heart that says, this is the woman for me or this is the man for me.
Right.
But the woman, this is another thing I'm going to say to women, you have to be the one who discovers it later.
Right.
See, the man needs to find it within himself that she is right for him. Then she has to respond to that by going, yes, it's true. That's why men propose.
Right.
But what women do before a man proposes is give him lots of messages that would say to him that if he did propose, you'll be successful. And what allows a man, because the big question women are always having, the single women, is how do you get a guy to commit? You know, we love each other. He's not committing. If he's not committing, generally, he hasn't got enough messages that he can be successful in making her happy. Now, some women misunderstand what I'm saying and say, oh, I told him I'd marry him. Matter of fact, I'm telling him he should marry me. When are we going to get married? I'm not talking about whether he's going to be successful when he proposes to you. He wants to know that he can be successful in the relationship. So what he needs to feel, many experiences, is that he can provide for her fulfillment.
Right.
So they have to have good, successful communication, which gives him the message that he could make her happy. So if she's off dreaming about vacations and mansions and all kinds of stuff, she needs to let him also know that, and of course, I don't need all that to make me happy.
Right.
You make me happy. It's really the little things that count most.
Right.
It's the way you look at me. It's the way you hold me. It's you're there for me when I need you the most. And that in itself, coming back to one of our other themes, is the real reason today men and women are being drawn together, and what will keep them together is emotional fulfillment.
Right.
Women need to feel that a man can provide for her emotional support. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean for men to become women.
Right.
That's why this can be misunderstood.
Then there's an imbalance there, just like the woman pursuing the man.
That's right. There's an imbalance there. What it means to provide emotional support means that when she's distressed or unhappy or unsupported, that you validate it, and you're there, and you listen, and you do your best to adjust little things in your behavior to make things better. You try to be a considerate, caring person. Okay, but you don't try to
become not a wimp.
But not a wimp. You know, a wimp isn't a considerate, caring person either.
Right.
Wimps are very considerate and caring in how they feel, but do they put it into action? You know, they're generally not out there taking the risk, the courage, and so forth.
They're just constantly apologizing and not making any shifts.
That's right. They're constantly. Yeah. And so the thing here is masculine and feminine. And the first step for men is to find their masculine, for women to find their feminine, have a relationship that supports both those sides. Then naturally, men become more and more in touch with their feminine. Naturally, women become more and more confident in their masculine, but they're established in their feminine.
So let me come back to something. So women in this questioning phase, if the man is pulling back in their estimation, if they're feeling insecure and they pursue and that doesn't seem to work, and they find someone else who has an interest in them or listens to them and so forth, that's very often then how a relationship could start for them as well.
Certainly you could.
Because you talked about how it happens for a man, how it happens for a woman, and then they can get caught up in the same pattern in essence? Or is it different?
It is different for women. What will happen with women is if they're really attracted to a man, they tend to be attracted to that man. Men can easily be attracted to 15 women in one day.
Why?
Okay. Well, it's different ways we're wired up. If you look historically, I mean, there's hormonal reactions. There's just basic reptilian brain action.
Right.
If you look right back in the animal kingdom, if you take a bull and you mate it with a cow, okay, it mates with a cow and it's finished. It's not interested. You take that cow out and put another cow in, he's back to work again. Hmm. I mean, this is just basic non-thinking reactions. Men see women. Arousal starts to happen. What we have to learn as men is to rise above being bulls and reptiles and learn how to harness that sexual energy. And the way you harness it is through monogamy, being able to focus that energy to a person you love. Finding someone you love, focus that energy on her and not spreading it around empowers him. What empowers a woman, okay, is being able to be in a relationship where she's able to get that kind of love and support.
Right.
Okay. Now, if she is on her male side, then she will also have that male tendency of looking around and so forth.
Okay.
So if she's on that side, then she has to practice mental monogamy and everything else if she's having that issue.
Right.
But it's primarily a male issue. And the primary issue for women is when he's there to be open to him and when he pulls away to understand it. Because what generally happens when a guy pulls away, woman feels hurt. Then when he comes back, she puts the door up and then I'm back.
Mm.
And that's the biggest sabotage in a relationship. It's like she slaps his hand. It's like men...
And he's saying, I didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's just being a guy, you know, and it's like, and a lot of men are, until my book, actually, a lot of men are convinced that something's wrong with them. They're not capable of having relationships because they have this back and forth thing.
Right.
This in itself helps men commit because they start to realize it's normal, natural to
it's
be
the tides.
Ambivalent. It's the tides. Exactly. They go in, they go out. And
you
have to accept that part of life.
Tell me about then what when women, because I have lots of women that'll get up and share this also, they'll say that they have two relationships and they feel bad about it and their partner doesn't even know, but they're trying to figure out what to do and they're in that dilemma. Are you suggesting that most of the time they're in that male mode, or is there another reason why that occurs?
No, there's another reason, but I have to ask one more question. Are they having sex?
Yes, it sounds, I don't know, I haven't asked them explicitly, but the impression I get is yes.
If they're having sex with two men, they'll be completely confused and never be able to make up their mind.
Well, that's clearly where they are very often when they ask those questions.
You know, it's just like saying, somebody's saying, I'm so sleepy all the time. I'm so sleepy all the time. I say, are you taking sleeping pills? They say, yes. there's no way a woman can ever know if a man's right for her if she's sleeping with two men.
Right.
What happens to a woman when a man has sex with her is, see, women are the host, okay? It's like the woman is the house and the guy visits. You know, when men... are visiting each other. We can go out to restaurants, whatever, you know, and that's, you get to go spend time with the person, you come back to your own world. When we have sex with a woman, we go into her world, we come back to our own. When a woman has sex with a man, she takes him in. All his feelings, all his attitudes, all his thinking, all that comes in and influences her enormously. Women are much, much enormously influenced by men in their lives, okay? Whereas men can be influenced by women and then they come back to being men again. We've got this natural, like a rubber band, we pull away and we spring back, but we pull away. Instinctively, we pull away. Women don't have that instinct to pull away. Their whole being is about getting closer and being nurturing. So if a woman's getting close to one man who's ambivalent about whether he loves her, okay, then she's getting close to another man who's ambivalent whether he wants to be with her.
Mm.
Suddenly she's got double ambivalence going on inside
her.
The complications are enormous.
Right.
You know, there's so much that goes on inside. Matter of fact, another dynamic that I don't address that much in my book. I don't address it all in Men from Mars, but it's in my first book, is What You Feel You Can Heal, is a very important principle that's true in relationships between men and women, but also in the family dynamic, is that what you feel, if you suppress it, if you don't honor it, your partner will feel it
right.
as if it's theirs. They'll feel it and
right.
express it. So what this means, women, if you're walking around angry at your husband and you're acting like you're not angry at your husband and trying to be loving and nice, he's going to be angry with you and he doesn't even know why. He'll just feel it and express
right.
it. Or let's say with your children, if you're both stressed out, upset, but you're trying to keep it all under control.
Kids still feel it, without a doubt.
Kids will feel it and they'll act out the most. They'll feel it and they'll express it. So if a woman is in a relationship with a man and he's now pulling away and she feels insecure, okay, she feels afraid that he doesn't love her, afraid that, oh, I'm afraid I won't be loved by him. I'm afraid he's the wrong person for me. That's a natural fear if somebody's right. not there for you. I'm afraid you're not the right person. Now she's feeling ambivalent. If she suppresses those feelings, he then starts to feel them, and now he's ambivalent.
Right.
But if she honors that, just to know, women, whenever a man is backing up, that's the time for you to go, well, maybe he's the right guy, maybe he's not, I don't know, let me be in this I don't know stage, and now let me do things that make me happy. So mm-hmm. women have to have lots of female relationships and things they do that make them happy. Whenever the guy pulls away, instead of waiting at the phone for his call, any woman that's waiting at the phone for a guy's call is sending out, you know, vibes to that guy to keep him from calling. It's like a guy goes to his cave, you're standing at the door, I'm here for you when you're ready to come out. You know, he's not going to come out.
He goes deeper in his cave.
He goes deeper in his cave. He's digging tunnels in his cave. I got to find another route out of here, you know, she's on the outside. Whereas if he's not available to her at that time, what she needs to do is go off shopping, go off and do something.
Right.
Real cute movie I just saw last night, French Kiss. I mean,
yes.
the whole thing. Was
Meg Ryan,
the,
right.
Yeah, he was telling Meg Ryan, if you want to win this guy back, it's just be in his presence, but you're not fully available to him. He has to win you over.
Right.
You know, it's not that you're running after him. If she's pursuing him, he loses interest. But if
but there's
she
a
makes,
delicate balance, though. She still has to give signals that he can
she
succeed.
Had to go to Paris.
Right. She went to Paris first to be
go.
In his presence.
She has to be. She has to get herself into his presence. That's what a woman does, is arrange the circumstances where the man can make the move.
Right.
That's the whole art of it. The man makes the move, but the woman arranges the situation so she's there and he's getting messages.
So he unconsciously knows the message that he's got a good chance for success.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
And even there's one book that was called Mating Signals. And in there they did studies of mating all around the world, anthropologists. And what they found consistently in all cultures, that primitive or civilized, the mating signal was the woman would look to the man, give a message with her eyes, they would say, you could be the one to make me happy. Not sure, but you could be. Maybe you could right. be the one, okay? And then she looks away. The man then has a chance to look her over, because men are visually attracted.
Right.
Look over, and does he feel chemistry? If he then feels chemistry, he then gets closer, because he's gotten a message from her that maybe he could be the one, that gives him the empowerment to take the risk of being rejected when he goes,
right.
goes forward. And this is something, again, a confusing thing for men and women. Generally speaking, and there are exceptions to this, okay? Generally speaking, for a man right away, if a relationship's going to work long time, a man needs to feel chemistry from the first moment.
Mm.
See, there's like a chemistry a guy feels, and that's not too hard for guys because we feel chemistry for almost every woman, you know. So, but some we don't, okay.
Right.
And as we get to know them, sometimes that chemistry starts disappearing real quick.
Or grow.
Or grow.
Yeah.
That's exactly
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And certainly there's room for growth, but there generally needs to be some good chemistry. I mean, sexual
right.
chemistry for the guy. But what women have to know is, in my interviews again and again with women who have been happily married, have great sex life, they weren't initially sexually turned on to this man. Okay.
Hmm.
And that
it grew with,
it can
with the intimacy
grow
of
over
communication.
Time. The intimacy of the communication grows over time. Now, sometimes a woman looks at a man and her fantasy is that this man is perfect for me and he understands me and he'll be there. And then suddenly there is chemistry.
Right.
But it's based on fantasy. But still, there can be chemistry right away for a woman, but doesn't necessarily have to be there.
Right.
Okay. A man, in a sense, wins that chemistry from her. But from his side, he generally needs to have a visual chemistry of her. And what women confuse this idea of visual chemistry with, that they have to keep their bodies looking the way they looked when they were younger, or they won't be attractive. And that's why I keep coming back to what men are really attracted to is the love, the possibility of the love when she's happy. And what keeps a man attracted to a woman's body, okay, turned onto her body. I mean, my wife's body turns me on now, more than, or at least equal to, it did in the beginning. Actually, it does more because I completely love her body. Before, right. It was like, well, maybe she might lose a little bit here, gain a little bit there. I mean, those thoughts were there. They're gone now. Her body creates the maximum fulfillment for me. She's the perfect person for me. Now, other people may not think she's the perfect person. Certainly, she's not going to be a pinup in some Playboy magazine. She doesn't fit that mold.
Right.
But what's happened is because arousal has been anchored to her.
Exactly.
I've been turned on to her. And when a man is turned on, his heart is fully open. And when a man's heart is fully open, then we're able to free ourselves from the hypnosis of the media. Because
right.
The media is constantly hypnotizing men that happy women look like this.
Yeah.
These sexy young women.
Yeah. 10 million of them.
That's right.
And images a year, I think the average man sees now.
10 million.
Yeah. 10 million images.
And
over
so
and over
we are being programmed that these are the women that you can make happy. They're the sexy women. Hmm. So we associate happy women with that body. Therefore, we think that's what turns us on.
Wow.
But what happens is when the heart opens, you're temporarily freed from the mental hypnosis, and your heart can experience the beauty of your wife. And when her heart is open, you see her full beauty, and you see right. Their body is the perfect expression of who she is, and you love who she is.
Wow.
So to me, one of the gifts of marriage and monogamy is I'm suddenly no longer caught up in this whole hunger for the perfect 10 body and that whole
right.
thing. When I was a younger man, I was, she had to look a certain way, and if she wasn't, other guys had it, I'd be jealous. I mean, those are wonderful women too. That's one type.
But you have all this emotion stacked here with your wife that you would never have stacked over there.
Right, and I don't have it stacked there. Yeah. And to me now, her body type, and this is what women don't know. I mean, there's just different body types. It's just that the media favors the ectomorph body type, which is the skinny, rectangular, not a lot of muscle, and not a lot of fat body type. Then there's the more muscular body type, which is mesomorph. Then there's the more fat tissue body type, which is endomorph. All are equally human, all are equally feminine, all are equally beautiful, and a million combinations of each.
Plus, we had to be taught. If you asked 100 years ago what an attractive woman like, or 200 years ago, it was a completely different form than what the media promotes now. So
right. And if you go to Mexico, it's different.
Yeah,
Mexican men see these models, they go, they're just bones and skin, you know? I want some meat.
So tell me, come back to the, because it's such a big issue. I want to make sure we touch on it because I know people deal with it every day.
Yes.
What does the person forgive when their partner has strayed? And if so, how do they do that? And if no, why not?
Okay, first of all, infidelity is a forgivable sin. I mean, this just needs to be. I've helped thousands of women forgive their husbands who have been unfaithful.
How about the other way around? Have you helped?
I've helped many, many men. It hasn't come to me as much, that's all.
Okay.
It's more common for men to be unfaithful than women. Today is, I have counseled many who have been women who have been unfaithful. Just this last weekend at a seminar, the man was, he was there because his wife had strayed. And he wanted to put the relationship back together.
Right.
He wasn't even, you know, and he said, how do I forgive? And I said, if a man's having a problem forgiving, the first step is he needs to feel he has a solution to solve the problem.
Mm.
Okay.
That's the first step for a man in almost anything, isn't it?
Right. So you have to have the confidence. Otherwise, your emotions will just take you over.
Right.
For men, it's like, all right, what can I do? Is there a solution? Yes. If a woman is unfaithful, there is a solution. The solution, the first step is to realize, what did he do to contribute to her having affairs.
Right.
And when he starts seeing through all this information I'm putting out that, oh, I wasn't listening. Oh, I was ridiculing her feelings. Oh, you know, I was making fun of this. Oh, I wasn't doing the romantic things that I need to do. Okay. No wonder she went somewhere else. She's hungry for that love and she was finding it somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Generally, when women have affairs, they say the reason for it is they weren't getting what they needed in their home.
Right.
Sometimes when men have affairs, they're clear, I'm not getting what I need in my marriage and I want it outside. But many times men have affairs just because it's available.
What do you mean it's available?
Well, he was on a business trip and some woman comes on to him. He's lonely, his wife's not there to have sex with, and he goes off and has sex.
Because it has a different meaning for him.
Right. It's just...
What does that mean to him?
Well, again, for a woman, she longs for sex when her heart is filled up. When a man isn't in touch with his heart at all, he tends to long for sex.
And through the as a way to get into his feelings.
To get into his feelings, to feel happy, to feel alive, to feel passion. If he has no sex with his wife, there's no place for him to feel passion. And particularly if he doesn't have passion in his work, where does he feel passion? He can just meet a strange woman and at least have an evening of passion. Hmm. So it connects him to those feelings. And men, naive as we are, we think we can do it and she'll never know. I'm telling all the men in the world, she knows her antennas have gone up and she's going to react as if she has. And I even look at this from when I used to have a counseling practice, the men would tell me, those men that were having affairs would tell me, but they wouldn't tell their wives. I would always say, you know, you need to tell her and we start over. And that used to be my formula for everybody, but some people are just afraid if I tell her, she'll leave. And some women will react so strongly that they will leave. So my message is now when communication gets really good, if you have a straight in the past, it's good to tell. But if it's not good right now and you think it will just erupt into something and you'll lose them completely, be logical here. Don't say you're having an affair, but stop having affairs. That's right. The important thing. And if you find that you're a sexaholic, which some people are, they have no control, then the only justice to your wife is to tell her, I have a problem and go for help. I'm fooling around on you. You see, sometimes in order to cure a bad habit, an addiction, you have to acknowledge it. And you have to tell the world.
Right.
You know, so if it really is a sexual addiction, which isn't always the case, but if it's a sexual addiction, the problem has to be identified. As long as you keep it secret, you have a harder time healing
it. So if a man has to know the solution, how does a woman forgive, and should she?
Okay, well, I didn't finish with the guy,
okay.
He needs to know that he's part of the problem.
Okay.
It's not that he's this victim, it all happened to him, that he has a way of winning her back. That's the first step. And he needs to take responsibility and apologize for those things, and the woman needs to forgive. On from her side and see that, okay, we will start again.
So if the woman is strayed, then the man, you're saying, first has to know there's a solution, there's a way to win her back.
There's a way to win her back. And what I would suggest to that man, because there are hurt and jealous feelings generally, and the best way to deal with those is the same suggestion I gave to women. Whenever a man is hurting, it's his female side. And the technique is first think about the situation, back up from the situation, and then process the feelings. Write out the feelings or talk to a therapist about it, whichever. So you get anger, sadness, fear, and any remorse, and get back in touch with what you want, what you wish, what you need. And right. Suddenly you're back on track. And of course, you've got your problem solver guy over here. Okay, I know what to do. Right. Men can just release that stuff so fast. If they can, and this is part of it, not just knowing what to do, that's the beginning, but you know what to do and you get the response from the woman that it's working.
Right.
That's the whole key.
Right.
You know, you asked me earlier about should women apologize? And certainly women, if they feel like they want to apologize and it feels good to apologize, do it. But so many women are tired of apologizing and they feel their self-esteem crashes when they apologize because they'll say to a guy, okay, I'm really sorry. He goes, well, you should be. And she says, well, I was wrong. And he goes, well, you were wrong. You know, and her self-esteem kind of crashes down, you know, and down and down. So after a while, women stop apologizing the men as well. And what most men do not know, and what as a marriage counselor I know, and you'd see it as any therapist, most therapists will see this. When men have a problem, they generally blame out first. You know, you're looking outward. How do I solve this? Who caused this? What am I going to do to that person? How am I going to change the situation? How can I shift the situation? We tend to blame out first, and then we tend to look at our side of it. It's just a natural reaction. Men sort of go out, then they come in. Women go in first, then they come out. And men don't realize this. Generally, before a wife will blame her husband for something, she's blamed herself 10 times. And see, husbands never see that. We just hear it's all our fault.
Right.
But what we don't know is that...
That's a great thing for men to know. To think she's gone through that process, then they don't feel like she's just jumping to conclusions.
Right. And she's not going to tell them that. I was surprised. I was going, who are these women that are coming to me? They're like looking at the problem as all their fault. But then when their husbands were in the room, the way it would sound, like it's all his fault.
Interesting.
So with that, and I started to see even in my own relationship, what I would tend to do, and not all men are this extreme, I made some big mistakes. What I would do is say, look, I'm right, and you're wrong, and until you apologize, I'm not going to forgive you. And I realized, boy, that was hard medicine. And
right.
I told her, and when I realized, I mean, I really didn't say it that way, but that was really the message.
That was the message, right?
That was the message. And when I told her, which is something I used to laugh at, now I believe in strongly, which is that old movie, which was, love is never having to say you're sorry.
Right.
Because, see, I know for a man, if you want that woman to trust you, you got to acknowledge your mistakes and say you're sorry. But from the woman's side, for a man to be maximally loving for a woman, if he can just adopt this posture and say, honey, everybody makes mistakes. You can make mistakes. You don't have to apologize for anything. Mm-hmm. I love you, and I'm here for you.
It feels like unconditional love.
It feels like unconditional love, and it is unconditional love. But what she can do, which doesn't make her self-esteem crash down, is when there's a problem, like say it's an argument. Instead of her going, gee, I'm sorry, I'm yelling at you, I'm sorry, I'm overreacting to you, or I'm sorry, I'm being too critical of you, she doesn't have to say that at all. All she has to do is she can say, if she wants to make up real fast, a fun way and an easy way, she can say, honey, I know this is hard for you, and I really appreciate you listening to this. I know probably this even sounds critical. I just want you to know I really appreciate you letting me go through this because I need to do this.
Right.
Appreciate. It's always you come back to how do you win a man over? Appreciate him.
Right.
Love him through appreciating what he does. And if he's being there, she doesn't have to apologize. Gee, I'm sorry I have all these feelings and it's burdening you. She shouldn't apologize for all these feelings. I'm sorry I'm taking up all this time. I'm sorry I'm not making this easy for you. She doesn't have to apologize. She's a Venusian. I'm glad she's doing it on some level because that's what makes us different and brings us together, and she has something to bring to the table. What she can do is acknowledge the simple truth, which is, I know this slows you down. I know this must be real frustrating. I know you just want to go off and do this thing, and I'm putting the brakes on
here. So then
you
feel like there's really understanding, there's really appreciation, you feel complete.
And men are happy to, if we get that appreciation. So that's another secret for women is to appreciate men.
This session continues on the next CD.
I want to make sure we come back to women so we keep this balance because we talked about what men should do.
Yeah.
First of all, how does a woman forgive in this situation? And should she, or what criteria does she use to know whether or not this is something you should forgive about?
And there it's good to just generalize about when do you forgive and what does forgiveness mean?
Right.
Let me just go to the bottom line there. If somebody hits you in the face and you walk away, I mean, what you have to do is walk away from that, and or maybe you have to fight back, whatever you have to do to protect yourself.
Right.
That comes first. You have to protect yourself. So let's say somebody's been critical of me or somebody hurt me or somebody hit me even or stole money from me in business, whatever it might be. That's a wound. I have to work at forgiving them. It doesn't mean I'm ever going to do business with them again. And that's very important.
Okay.
What it means is I wish that person well.
Right, I totally
and I
agree.
Trust that they can learn their lessons.
Right.
And I know that my forgiveness will help them in the long run to become a more responsible person. But I may not be willing to go through that process with them.
Right.
Okay. So forgiveness doesn't mean let's just keep with this problem. It means basically.
In other words, you got to forgive just so you have a better life regardless. The then question is, once you've forgiven, do you want to continue in the relationship? And a lot of people's idea of protecting themselves is don't put yourself back in that situation. But you're sometimes more vested when it comes to an intimate relationship.
Oh, yeah. I mean, having an affair is generally just a sign the relationship hasn't worked if the woman's had the affair. If a man has had an affair, it's a sign the relationship hasn't worked, or it's a sign he doesn't understand how important monogamy is, and now that it's been found out, he has a chance to reevaluate. Is it that important? Is he really willing to be honest and be committed and practice monogamy and even mental monogamy? And it's a matter of, if a man has had an affair, explaining to the woman, you know, this is why I did it, and this is how I see I'm not going to do it again. For a woman to stay in a relationship with a man after he's had an affair, she needs to have a sacred promise from him that he's not going to have another affair. You know, I've counseled some women whose husbands say, look, I'm going to have affairs, and if you don't like it, then you can get out.
Or some people promise, and they mean it, and then in the moment, but later on, things change for them. And women, I think, are afraid of that, just like men are afraid of that after a situation like that. How do they know when they can trust that promise? I think it's a big question that I hear people bring up all the time.
Trust is the primary female issue.
Right.
Okay. The male issue, by the way, is caring. You know, when a guy is frustrated, he finally goes, well, then I don't care. Then I don't care. You see, these men have been married many years. They're very passive. Well, I'm not going to bother. I don't care. They don't have the energy. When you care about something, you've got the focus, you've got the energy, and they stop caring. Women stop trusting. They start closing down. They stop being turned on as much in sex. They stop being as responsive when they're happy. They're getting little digs whenever they can into their husbands instead of just receiving him for what a great guy he is, accepting him and appreciating him. So trust is the big issue. And forgiveness, when a woman works to find forgiveness, then trust can grow. But she has to forgive for trust to grow again. And the forgiveness needs to be an emotional experience where her hurt feelings, ideally, this is the ideal thing. She writes them out or she communicates them completely, her anger, her hurt, and her fears. And her partner is able to hear that. He needs to hear the consequence of what he did.
Right.
And hearing it, he will naturally have an empathetic response.
Right.
When she can share, when she can get that empathetic response, then the forgiveness response happens and trust starts to happen. She can't grow. She has to grow in trust. What I say to couples is, if an affair has happened, what you have to know here is you're starting your relationship over. Okay? It's like starting back at square one. And for some couples, they can have a crummy relationship and they have an affair. Resolving that affair actually makes the relationship much better because at least they go back to square one where they're starting again. Right. What are our intentions? Do we really want to be with each other? How much am I willing to give to this relationship? So sometimes healing affair can be the strongest element in a relationship.
Wow.
Now, I don't then say, go out and have an affair to bring that about. But what I do say, and even my wife did this to me one time, and she came to me and she says, you know, John, it was about the third year of our marriage and my business was really picking up and very successful. And I thought that's what it was all about, is provide and do all this stuff. And she was feeling ignored, less time for her, less romantic evenings and so forth. And she says, you know, John, I really miss you. And I said, well, what do you mean? I says, well, you know, I'm just not as happy as I used to be. And I said, well, why? And she says, well, I'm starting to feel like having an affair.
Whoa.
And my first, that was to my affair. And my first reaction with most men's is with who? And she had the best answer. She says, well, I'd love it to be with you. I said, okay, we will have an affair. Okay. And that was the best answer. And you got
one sharp lady here. I'll tell you what.
She is. I mean, she's partnering this whole thing with me. But this is what women can do instead of having affairs, is let their partners know, I'd like to have an affair. Now, I don't suggest the same thing to men, okay? You don't go to your partner and say, honey, I miss you, I want to go have an affair, okay? That doesn't say I care about you. You say, I miss you, I really love you, what is it I can do to open you up, what do we need to do here, okay? Right. So you come back to her.
Well, let's talk about that, because I want to make sure this tape is done. There is a great, when you were, you know, I didn't mention this earlier, and I wanted to, but of all the people that we have at Master University, you're always one of the most popular amongst all of our people. But this year you did me a great favor and everyone else, and I asked you, would you do something different you've never done before? And you did, as you remember, you did a piece on sex that people are still talking about as legendary.
Right, right.
I mean, people laughed, people, God, they felt, they went, yes. I mean, it was fantastic. One part that I think we can talk about here on the tape,
yes,
you know, even without all the pre-framing, is talk about the whole idea of, you know, I think you know a little bit, we teach the six human needs about the need for variety, the need for certainty, you know, the need for significance, the need for connection. And I'm hearing all these in this whole conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the great things you shared there was the whole idea of how to keep the passion alive by having variety in your sex life. And what does that mean? And, you know, because everybody says, well, have a date night and surprise somebody. But I really love your theory. So would you tell us about the joy of quickies, good home cooking sex, gourmet sex,
right,
and fast food sex?
Right, right. Well, I mean, this to me was the biggest revelation, because it can change a sexual relationship instantly, this information. I mean, we're talking couples who had stopped having sex, had lost their passion. They'd hear this discussion, and all the woman had to do was nod to her husband and say, sounds okay to me. And his blood's flowing. I'm telling you, this it's just all a man needs, and this is all a woman needs. That's why it is.
I watch it. People are talking about it. Yeah, I mean, it's such a simple thing. It's fantastic.
It is such a simple thing.
So now we built it up. Tell them.
Right, right. So it's having an expanded sexual menu, a guilt-free menu, and a fulfilling sexual menu. And the bottom line is three different types of sex.
Right.
And certainly there's a lot of in-between, but basic types of sex, which you just mentioned. The first we'll call gourmet sex. And gourmet sex says, what are a woman's fantasy needs? What is everything a woman wants for sex to be great? She wants lots of romance. So what a man does, he goes overboard. This night, for gourmet sex and a romantic evening, everything is for her. He takes her out to dinner. At dinner, he doesn't pig out and get drunk, but he saves his energy for later.
Right.
It's good conversation. He then takes her to the theater. Maybe it's early. It's a whole evening for her. You know, and he knows the directions, and he doesn't get lost, and he has his wallet with him. He doesn't ask her for the money, whatever. You know, he really goes overboard to try to do the things. He buys flowers, and this night is for you, honey, and that's the message. And then when they do make love that night, he takes a long time, okay? Because that's throughout the book
flower
I talk about.
Flower petals all over the bed. And
oh, that's
the
a good one. I haven't tried that yet, but I definitely, with the incense and the candles and different music. Different music is a good one, too. He really goes overboard to make it a special evening. And it doesn't have to be too overboard. I don't want to put men at too much work here, but just put forth the effort. Like
right.
We talked, we put forth the effort. He's really putting forth it. And then you go really slow in sex. And one of the formulas I remind for men always to remember with women, which is when you're touching a woman's body, follow the compass, and the compass points north first. Always go north, okay, before south. Men are such a hurry to go south. That's the goal, okay? That's the gold mine, all right? So you start north. You know, you got to give her the message. The most important thing is her. It's the kiss, okay? The eye contact, and then stroking her hair and touching her ears, kissing her earlobes, kissing her all over her body. Lots of foreplay, slowly moving down, and not every time exactly that way.
Right.
Matter of fact, another thing I stress in the book is we men tend to want to find a formula, and we want to stick with the formula. Once we have a formula that works, we go, hey, just follow the formula, it will work, okay? But what we have to know is that for women, as soon as you do the same formula repeatedly, she can't be passionate, she can't have an orgasm, she can't be responsive, it becomes mechanical for her. And much the same way, if we went to a baseball game, we loved it, we'd buy the videotape, come home, watch it, be all excited, but 10 times later, you watch it the 10th time, you know every move, you know when they're on first base, second base, right, who's gonna win, what's gonna happen?
It's the suspense that makes it work.
That's right, the suspense, okay. So in sex, if you're using different approaches each time,
right,
okay, sometimes rush towards those breasts and slowly pull away, then go back towards the breasts, slowly point away. And one of my favorite pointers I just tossed in here is for men. The men will be making masterful love, and then when it comes time to take off her bra, he'll like reach behind her and start to struggle. Now he's got to turn her over and figure this thing out, you know? It's like she loses all, the flow gets broken. So I suggest for men, go to find her bra drawer when she's not around and study the bra snaps, okay? There's three different kinds of snaps, you know? And you just learn how to do them, so you can do them with your eyes closed. And then you're making love with you and snap that. She goes, oh, I'm in the hands of a love, a master of love, you know? It's just, so she needs to feel that you know what you're doing. And of course, many times we don't have a clue as to what we're doing. We're going, this isn't working. Then you just try something else. It's not so much what you do, but how long you take to do it. That's the thing for men to understand.
You have a formula for that also, don't
you? Yeah, exactly. We need formulas for the whole thing, but we just don't use the same one all the time.
So what's that formula that you talk about there?
Okay, so now we want to give her the orgasm, okay? That's another formula, okay? How do you give a woman an orgasm? You make sure that you take longer than you would normally take to achieve orgasm. Basically, if you look at biological differences between men and women, men need about, once a man's aroused, he needs about 2 to 3 minutes if he's just going for it. Once a woman's aroused, romantically aroused, she can need 10 times that, 20 to 30 minutes of actual physical stimulation.
So if you want great orgasms, add more O's to the bottom.
That's right. Okay.
To your 2 and 3, make it 20
or 30.
That's
right. You put an O after the 2, O after the 3, you get 20 to 30 minutes. And basically, 20 to 30 minutes, that's what I call healthy home-cooked sex. So our sexual menu has gourmet sex, which is a romantic evening, and sex is at least 30 minutes, if not several hours. But
right,
you go at it slow, and some guys say, several hours, how can you hold on that long? He said, well, you don't keep getting all excited. You pull out the massage oil and you don't rub on her the whole time. You got to back off, you got to massage her for a while, and then you have to kiss her and hold her and then move around a bit. And you take time, but you just do anything you can to slow
I wish we had a videotape of your face while you're doing this. They'll have to see you at Mastery or something.
Okay, they'll have to come. So you have the gourmet evening. Then you have healthy home-cooked sex. And healthy home-cooked sex is like the staple kind of sex. It takes about 30 minutes in a relationship. I mean, it takes about 30 minutes in the bedroom. You go in, and this is an outline, okay, for regular home-cooked healthy sex. What it means is that if the woman is in the mood to have an orgasm, there's enough time for having an orgasm. And that's another important note that men have to know, is that women can enjoy sex and not have an orgasm. Sometimes they want an orgasm, sometimes they don't want an orgasm. It's like women are like the moon. When the moon is full, she wants her orgasm. But if she's the half moon, she might want it, she might not. You might do all the things that would give her an orgasm on the full moon, but on the half moon, she's not going to have an orgasm. But she's happy. She's completely fulfilled. It's like the difference of going to see, you know, 4th of July fireworks or for a lunch in the country, you know,
right,
next to a calm stream. It's a wonderful day. So for her, you have intimacy, you know, very exciting sometimes. Other times, it's not orgasmic for her,
right,
but it's very fulfilling for her.
Regardless of what the man does.
Regardless. Okay, and then there's times when it's the new moon, okay? And even then, some women say, I loved having sex with my husband at the new moon, but the last thing I want him to do is think about me responding, okay? There's just no sexual pleasure in her body that day. I mean, it's just nothing's gonna happen. It's like she just lies there, but he's happy. And that's the difference between men and women. She's like the moon, sometimes really into it, sometimes not, and that's perfectly normal. Whereas for men, They're not like the moon. They're like the sun that rises every morning with a big smile, okay? And what that means is once a man's aroused, he wants his orgasm. And if he doesn't achieve orgasm, something's wrong. He goes, what's the matter here? Why? You know, if he doesn't get to have an orgasm, generally he's sore. He's not satisfied, you know. And or if it doesn't happen, he's going, what's wrong, all right? But for a woman, she doesn't have to have it every time. And when women read that, this is perfectly normal. And 90% of all the women on this planet experience that same thing. There are some women that have orgasm every time, okay? But for 90%, it's sometimes they have orgasm, sometimes they don't. And even the women that have orgasm every time, I coach them into, just as an experiment, try not going after the orgasm. Have your lover slowly bring you the orgasm, but then not bring you the orgasm, and just see what that's like. Try slowing down so that the times when you do have your orgasm, you'll find they might be much bigger.
Right.
You know, one woman just shared with me the other day, she says, it takes me a minute.
Wow.
You know, she has, and I said, you know, is you like it? She says, what's an orgasm? I said, if you were to slow down and just get close and settle down, let it build. That's called peaking. Let it go up, come down. Let it go up, come down. Then when you finally have the orgasm, it will be much greater, which is why that's the benefit for men. When men take the time to build a woman up to high orgasm first, then when he has his orgasm, it's much bigger.
Right.
Whereas if a man just does it in 2 to 3 minutes, it's great, it's wonderful, it's intense, and there's no complaints.
Right.
But if he takes the time to build her up, then it's not just a physical experience, but it's an emotional, even spiritual experience of union and ecstasy and love with sexual pleasure. So
right.
You really can't get to that in 3 minutes of intense.
Right.
Well, you can a little bit, particularly the man. But you experience something much greater if you go slow with her. If you're pacing your energy with hers, what happens is you're able to more fully go into her, which is what you're longing to do.
More fulfilling.
I mean, it's more fulfilling, much more fulfilling. And the love that comes back to you and the recharge, rejuvenation the man receives is much greater than if he doesn't take that time. And now here's the third and most important, which is why we need this sexual menu, which is gourmet sex is the whole evening's for the woman. Home-cooked sex is for the relationship,
right.
Meaning you take enough time, both people get their orgasm. Then you have on the other spectrum, quickie sex. And quickie sex is for the man. It's not for the woman. The woman's not going to get hardly anything, at least in the beginning, from quickie sex. It's like microwave sex. You cook it fast, you know. It's a blowtorch. Just take it, fry it over real fast. But this is particularly for the man. And it's very important that men experience sex without having to put the brakes on all the time. Certainly we can do it sometimes. It's like driving a Ferrari in town. You're stopping at stoplights, stopping at stop signs. But you need to just take that Ferrari out on the freeway and wind out those gears and blow the carbon out of the carburetor, okay? Good for the car, good for the man, okay, which is quickie sex. There's just, men love to just, sometimes a man just wants to have sex with a woman and just have sex. Just lie on her, rub on her, enter her, move in her, have his orgasm, and he feels relieved. There's a tension that leaves his body, he feels great. And today, in the last 10, 20, 30 years, men are now being made to feel guilty for that. Because truly, a woman doesn't get much out of it. And so a woman goes, well, if you're just going this fast, what am I going to get out of it?
Right.
And so the guy has to go, particularly if he's a sensitive guy who cares and loves his wife, he has to, well, gee, you know, I don't want to just do this. I guess I'm a real, real selfish jerk here if I just want to fulfill myself. But he should be fulfilled sometimes. It's like a
just
relationship.
Just like the gourmet.
Just like the gourmet for the woman. All
right.
Women can relate to that. Yeah, I want an evening just for me. Well, it's only 5 minutes even. It's not even a whole evening. It's just 5 minutes, okay? That's all it takes, you know? So I have to honestly say, I developed this idea. Certainly I heard the problem with other people, but also I experienced it in my own marriage. You know, there'd be times I didn't want to do the foreplay thing. And I'd, you know, try to do the foreplay time, but I'd be doing foreplay on my wife. And the whole time I'm going, how long is this going to take?
Oh, no, John,
and you know,
no.
The truth is women feel, oh my gosh, I'm taking so long. You know, it's frustrating for everybody.
Right.
So what I said to my wife is, I said, can't there be some times where we just skip the foreplay? We just have a quickie. And she goes, why? I go, because sometimes I just want to do it, you know? I just want to do it. And I don't want to do all the foreplay. I just want to go for it. And she says, well, I don't know if I want to do that. And I said, well, give me the reasons why. And she said, well, first of all, if we take 3 minutes to do it, I'm not going to be all responsive, and I can't have you asking me, was that good for you? And I said, okay, You don't have to worry about that at all. You can lie there like a dead log.
Okay? Oh, John! Oh no!
But you see, you can't expect a woman to be responsive if you're doing a quickie,
right?
Because she needs time. She needs foreplay. So first of all, okay, you change
the ground rules.
Yeah, you change the whole context right there. Okay, okay. You reframe sex for right. that kind. Okay, so you've got her, and she doesn't have to respond in any way. And she said, "Now you're sure that's okay, John?" I said, "Yes." I said, "So can we do it?" She goes, "Well, there's a few more considerations." I says, "What else?" She says, "Well, I want to make sure that this isn't all we have."
Right.
Because that would happen many times. Once, if a guy says, "Hey, we can skip to foreplay," well, then let's just do it every time this
way. Go into his business efficiency mode.
That's right. Go into efficiency mode. And the thing is, he would actually like that, but he wouldn't realize that if every time they had sex, it was a quickie, he would quickly lose attraction for her.
Right.
Because what keeps a man coming back in the long run is that she enjoys sex.
Right.
See, if she's not getting the time she needs,
he's not making her happy, and
it's not making her happy. Right. Therefore, the irony is that he'll lose attraction for her. Right. So quickies burn out real fast, which is the way old marriages used to be. And certainly then a man does, you know, even when a man's not attracted to his wife that much, he still can enjoy sex with her. You know, it's just to get a release. You know, it's certainly better than masturbation, and he gets his sexual release. But all the passion and the tenderness and the love and the growing and the sharing, the intimacy, all that starts to go away. So we had to have regular home-cooked sex. That's what we define. Okay, right. So you want regular 30-minute sex. She says, "Well, it doesn't have to be 30 minutes exact." Here, I'm Martian, wanting it for me. But something around that. Okay, you want regular. Okay, so at that point in our marriage, you know, I said, "So how much of that do you want?" She said, "Three times a week." I went, "Three times a week?" You know, at that point, I was really busy working all the time. So we were negotiating. So I said, "How about once a week?" And she says, no, three times. And I said, "Okay, we do it two." Okay, now, ironically, 5 years later in our marriage, I came to Bonnie. I said, "Honey, I'm really ready to renegotiate. What if we come back to a regular of three times a week? If that's what you wanted." And she says, "No, I really wanted two, but I went high because I knew you'd go low."
Negotiating for real estate, aren't
right,
you?
Right. Anyway, it was playful. We did it playfully. But so it's about twice a week. And for home-cooked sex, and that's the basic, and that's what we had been doing. I said, Right. Okay, this is what we've been doing, so we'll keep doing that. And whenever I want, we have a quickie. That's okay with you? She says, "Yeah, that's okay, but..." And this is when she realized she had real negotiating power. This is something I wanted. That's when she came up with the idea of, how about the gourmet sex?
Right.
Once a month, it's an evening for me, lots of romance, and we take lots of time. So if once a month I'm getting this, then on a regular basis, we're having regular lovemaking, takes about 30 minutes. Then when you want your quickies, you just say you want a quickie. So that was what we started out with. And I start telling men this, they go, "Wow." Now, what I started noticing inside of me is my whole attraction to my wife started dramatically increasing. And it had been there in the beginning, and then it sort of waned a bit, and I thought, well, that's the way it normally is. Suddenly it all came back. And I discovered the reason it came back is I felt a new feeling. Anytime I wanted, I could go up to my wife and say, "Honey, let's have sex." See, most men walk around going, "Well, gee, I'd like to have sex, but she's making dinner. Or I'd like to have sex, but we're rushing to get ready for something." Or he says, "Honey, let's just have sex." And she says, "There's no time to have sex. I can't have sex. I'm worrying about this. I'm paying bills." Now, if I want sex, I say, "Honey," I just rub up against her, whatever, say, "Wanna have sex?" And if she doesn't have time and she doesn't want to make love at that time, then what she'll say is, "We can have a quickie." And then suddenly, the end result of permission, guilt-free quickies, as soon as there's guilt-free quickies in a relationship.
It's guilt-free because you know that you're not just taking because you're going to create gourmet sex. And
that's right.
Right, okay.
Because I would feel guilty if I'm just taking, but
sure,
I know it's like, I'm taking today, but tomorrow you get yours, and therefore
right.
we're even.
Right.
Matter of fact, I even have a little saying I suggest for men after a quickie is always afterwards to say, "Next time's for you." You know, just to remind, you know, this really is give and take, and today it was all for me.
I can hear some women going, "Oh, they're going to overuse that phrase."
Well,
but I hear what you're saying.
It's not a matter of using each other. It's a matter of just everybody getting what they need
right.
and balancing it so that women get what they need and men get what they need.
Yeah.
Historically, men got what they needed.
Right.
And women didn't get what they needed.
Right.
And now, in the last 30 years, with all the books on sex and romance, women, they know what they want, they know what they need at least many times, but then the men are being left out.
Right.
So all I'm saying is, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, now you have balance. And what results is this whole thing that goes on, this has helped me understand the basis of why men start losing attraction to their partners. We've discussed a few others, but
right.
one of the reasons is a man will initiate sex and the woman will reject him. She doesn't know how sensitive he is when he rejects. Women have to know the most vulnerable moment in a man's life is when he initiates sex. There's nothing more vulnerable. And when he initiates sex, he's very, very vulnerable. And what she says has a lasting impression on him. And it's the same thing if a woman was crying and a guy ridiculed her. Okay, when a woman's crying, that's when she's most vulnerable.
Right.
A man's approaching a woman sexually, the woman he loves, he's very vulnerable. How she responds is very critical on how much he'll continue to want to approach her in that way. So women unknowingly reject men. Women do things like, oh, I can't have sex now. I'm making dinner. That's ridiculous. Or we got to go off and do this. Or the Joneses are coming over. She doesn't know the Joneses are now more important than me. You know, it's just like these little things she says, men really take it in.
Right.
And so after a while, it hurts so much that a man will stop. He stops initiating sex whenever he feels like it. You know, in the first year of marriage, guys just sort of rub up against the woman. They have sex. Then later on, they rub up against, she says, I'm tired, I got a headache, well, I got to go do this, we can't do this. And particularly when you have kids, you now have to start negotiating verbally, when do you have sex?
Right.
It's very hard for men to say, well, let's have sex tonight. And she goes, oh, not tonight, tonight I got to do this and this and this. So he will tend to stop initiating sex. And now he's in the hunting mode. He'll be in this mode. And women don't realize, is she in the mood? Is she not in the mood? Women have no idea how much we're looking all the time. Is she in the mood? Is she not? And every time we're looking, is she in the mood? Is she not? And we assume she's not in the mood. A part of us feels rejected.
Hmm.
When the truth
even
is...
Even when we make it up in our own head.
We make it up in our own head.
Wow.
When the truth is, had we gone up to her and said, honey, you want to make love tonight? She might have said, well... Gosh, I didn't even think about making love. Maybe we can talk for 20 minutes and maybe I'll find out I want to make love. Here's another thing I learned about so I wouldn't feel rejected in the marriage. This is before I learned about the quickies. Because what happens now, what happens in any relationship where they adopt this menu, is when the man and men feel free to initiate sex anytime. And if she's not in the mood, she can say, well, I don't really have much time, but we can have a quickie. And so he never feels rejected. And suddenly the man is just like right the way he was in the beginning. The door is open. His heart can just open up and flow towards her. And there's so much romance when a man knows he's not going to be rejected sexually.
Wow.
So this is hugely, and I didn't even know that. All I knew is I wanted guilt-free quickies, and so would every other man. But the result is, then you never have to feel rejected. Now, here's what added on top. This is what women told me afterwards. Women started telling me, this is great, because the truth is, I like to feel really close to him, and my life is so stressful and so busy. There are times when there's no way I have time to get all into it, but I like to feel his love for me, and he loves me so much when we're having sex. I like to feel him desiring me. Older women have told me, you know, I like quickies, because sometimes we go to a party and all these young, beautiful women, I start to feel insecure. And I just say to my husband, honey, let's have a quickie. And he's right there for me. Makes me feel very secure in his love. Right. So it's a way, see, she cannot even be into sex, but she can enjoy that he's into having sex with her.
Right.
And some women say, you know, yeah, I just enjoy having him moving inside of me. It just feels really good. I could care less about the orgasm, but just to feel his heart opening, because that's what happens when men are being sexually satisfied. Their heart is opening and opening. They're more in touch with their feelings because they're feeling so much pleasure. Their feelings of love start to come up as well.
Right. Let me just ask you this. You said men need to go north first. I know you say that women need to go south first.
Yeah, right.
Right. See, women, look, I think that's the ultimate quickie is going south first.
That's right. That's the ultimate quickie. And, you know, sometimes I was just being interviewed for what to do during the holiday season, how to cope with stresses. And I was just saying, well, men, try to be more patient, listen more before you give solutions, hold back, be more empathetic, show more affection, buy more flowers, hold her more, be proud of her. That's from the man's side. But from the woman's side, you know what would be the equivalent of that, women? Tell him twice this month, anytime he wants it, he's got it, you know? It's like a pass. He just hands it, and he's got it. And you know what you could do? Another thing
Christmas gift, a box full of quickie passes.
He can get them whatever he wants.
It's an e-ticket ride.
And another little thing there is something women would never think of. Wake up a man in the middle of the night and roll on top of him and have sex with him, have a quickie. See, women would never think of that, because if a guy was to roll on top of her for a quickie, she's like being woken out of sleep, you know? What's the big deal? But what women don't know is men are having erections all through the night. You know, they're happening all the time. You just catch him when he's got the erection and roll on top. It's like you're beyond any possible dream, okay? But just that the availability, that a woman is available like that, just frees a man up. And it's not the only thing. I mean, men need to feel appreciated. But one of the ways she can show her appreciation is to show her receptivity to him when he's interested in sex, and also to be open to having quickies.
Someone is going to hang, they're going to stop this tape in a few moments. It'll be over. What are two things that they can do, a man can do immediately to score huge points and connect? And what are two things a woman could do immediately? And they say, God, there's so many great things in this tape. They'll probably listen to it many times. What are two things they could do right now?
Well, first of all, the philosophy is men and women keep score differently. For women to feel loved, you have to do lots of little things. And men think, okay, I'm going to schedule a Hawaii trip, expensive vacation, and that should make her feel really great. What men don't know is every act of love scores equally with every other act of love. So if you've scheduled that vacation, that's 1 point.
Even though it took a lot of effort.
If you go bring her 24 flowers, that's 1 point.
They're equal.
One flower is 1 point. Working hard, that's 1 point. Some guys are working so hard to make all this money, you come home, 1 point. He thinks, hey, I scored this big deal, that's worth 100 points. 1 point. Lots of little things. These are the things that a man can do. See, this is so easy because it doesn't mean making a lot more or doing a lot more. It's focusing your energy into doing the little things that really count.
Right.
And what I call them the golden 20 minutes. I come home, I find my wife. Just that, you get a point for that. You know, I make it a habit. Just the other day, a new one is whenever I go to the refrigerator to get juice, instead of just going and getting juice, I say, honey, would you like some juice? You get a point for that, just to consider her as well
as yourself.
So you
don't have to go all the way to Hawaii to get a point.
Right, you don't do that. But it doesn't mean you don't go to Hawaii if you can afford it. But even if you do go to Hawaii, don't wait till the last minute to plan it. Plan it a year in advance. Then every time she thinks about it, you get a point. Lots of guys always wait till the last minute for these things. When they get married, they stop dating their wives. You see, they wait till the last minute, where you want to go tonight. Instead,
plus they lose the power of the creativity, the fun, the points within yourself.
That's right. So you do it a week in advance. Every day, if she's looking forward to a date with you, you're going to go see the Phantom Opera on Friday. Every day she's thinking, I'm going to the Phantom Opera. Every day she tells a girlfriend you're going to the Phantom Opera. You get a point then. So it's lots of little things. Learning.
Anticipation.
Right. So I find her. I get a point for that. I touch her. Affection is very important. Many women complain, you know, he only touches me if he wants sex.
Right.
And men go, what's wrong with that? You know, it's just like, well, but what women need is to feel that you're not just touching her when you want sex, but you're touching her because you love her and you want to be close to her. So, and of course, you know, women might be listening and go, why does a man need to be taught that? The reason men need to be taught that is that we have different hormones. There's a cuddling hormone and the testosterone sex hormone in men. And we have the cuddling hormone when we're children. And when testosterone starts coming in around puberty, the cuddling hormone goes into latency.
Right.
So now we're thinking sex, sex. That's the big thing. Whereas for women, they always have the cuddling hormone throughout their entire lives.
Right.
For men, it goes away. Then when a woman's dating a man, he seems all cuddly, but she doesn't realize all that cuddly energy is really testosterone with manners.
You need to be a stand-up comic. Forget this. Oh my gosh!
You bring out the best of me.
You're awesome, buddy. You're awesome.
So what I'm doing is letting women know.
What does a man do though? What is a man's score system?
Okay. Well, let me just finish this one. So what I'm telling the women is that a lot of this stuff men need to learn.
Okay.
It's not instinctive, and that's because women have the idea if he loves me, he'll just do it. He doesn't have to listen to a tape. He doesn't have to learn about this stuff. He needs to learn. He needs to have the reasons why. Then he's motivated. Okay, so affection. So I'm more affectionate. I'm more huggy. And you know, as I started doing this, my cuddling hormones came out of latency. And this is what will happen to every man. It's like the female side started coming out. Now, I love cuddling with my wife.
Right.
I love going around. I love kissing her on the cheek and kissing her around her face. And she just loves it. She looks at me like, what did I do today? You know, just like, but it's one point. That's that point. That's right. That's a point for that. So.
And you go, I did that.
I did that. That's right. So little things, helping out, cooperating. And the big thing is when you hear women complaining about a lot of different things, not to be upset with her. If she can say negative things and you don't get upset with her, every time she changes the subject, that's another point. Hmm. When she's in a bad mood, I go, hey, I can get 20 points out of this. Okay? I know just what to do. Get her talking and don't get upset with her. Duck and dodge.
Duck and dodge.
And then eventually give her a hug and be empathetic and don't give her solutions at the end. And sometimes she even say, so what do I do? What do I do? I say, I don't know. That's a point for saying, I don't know. See, you got to have a trick. Whereas in the workplace, you wouldn't want to say, I don't know. Now you got to deliver the solution.
That's right.
You know, so there's, I don't know, but, you know.
Different
I'm
games
here.
In life require different strategies.
That's right.
Different scoring opportunities.
So that's what men have to know is what you do, the little things you do, like carrying in the logs. She sees me carry. Even when I did that, I started learning. And men instinctively do this. They always carry more logs than are easy. You know, men are like, I want to get it over with. But also, she sees him carrying all those logs. That's a point. Then you build the fire. That's another point. And what I used to do, another technique, is I build the fire kind of small. And then every time I put more logs on it, get more points. Okay. Again, if she goes, he knows how to keep that fire going. He's got staying power.
He also got up and did it.
Women love to see men getting up and doing things. So it's the little things that count. This is what I keep telling men. You know, the wife might be complaining, oh, the house needs to be repainted, and the yards and this, and the kids are going through this problem, and that light bulb's out, and then go on and on. After she's done, he should just say, I'm going to change that light bulb. Gets up, goes off and does it, gets a point. Now, had he said, well, honey, I'm going to go out and fix that yard, which is a six-hour job, that's 1 point. So what I'll admit is focus on the easy and the little
thing. Focus on the light bulb.
That's right. Focus on the light bulb. Focus on the light bulb.
Now, but what about women?
What about women? See, women make the mistake because, see, women know when men do things for them, men do little things, considerate things, caring things, it means so much. So women then think, okay, I'm going to score lots of points with him by doing lots of considerate, caring things.
Right.
So she's doing all this stuff. Thinks it's, he doesn't mind. It's nice. Like she leaves little love notes around. That's nice. But if a man leaves little love notes around, that's 2 points. Okay. That's
right.
And she'll hold on to it. Every time she looks at it, he gets points. That's why notes are really good. Men should know. Because then she looks at it, he gets points. She looks at it again. And you'll see she'll store those notes. My wife says when I'm in my cave and she's feeling unloved, she goes and reads the notes I've written her.
Hmm.
Women hold on to that stuff because he does love me. He does love me. Even though to us, of course, it's obvious I love you. I just went out and did all this stuff for you. To them, they need that reassurance.
Right.
So what women have to know is the way you score points with men is you can score big points with men. You can do one thing and score 100 points. Okay.
Right.
You can, whereas not everything
and you
is equal.
You might not get any points for some of those small things.
And you get minus points
because
as well.
But right. So how does a woman score 100 points?
So this is
points?
For women. So for women to know, I mean, you can go around women doing all kinds of things and you do score one point, okay. But to score big with a guy, okay, it's not so much what you do, but how you respond to what he does. For example, every time women, you have an orgasm, you got 100 points, okay. That's it. That's the freedom. I mean, every time a guy gets an orgasm, you get 1 point. Women don't come in saying, oh, my husband has such great orgasms. Okay. But to be able to have those orgasms, you can't fake them. That doesn't work. You have to have a good relationship.
Right.
So a good relationship means, from the female point of view, for the man, that he feels successful in making
right.
him happy. So where men give women the most points is when a woman minimizes his incompetence.
Mm.
So let's say he's lost and she doesn't make a big deal out of it. Suddenly he's going, oh, this is nice. She's not making a big deal out of it. Because see, whenever men...
20 points.
That's right, 20 points. And let's say he's really
not
lost.
Not orgasm, 100 points, but 20 points.
That's right, definitely not. But let's say, I mean, here's an example of it. When I was courting Bonnie, I was taking her to a resort. And I got in a big conversation with her and I eventually came back to driving and realized I was in the wrong state. Okay, I was hugely embarrassed, humiliated. I'm trying to impress this woman, and I pull over the side of the road.
That's because you're listening so intently.
It's true, but I wouldn't try to explain it to her. Okay, there I was, completely sweating beads, embarrassment that here I'd blundered. I was in the wrong state. How can she trust me? Depend on me if I can't even get there? You know. Her reaction was, well, where are we? And I said, well, I'm not really sure. I didn't tell her we were in the wrong state, and she looked around and she goes, well, I don't know where we are either, but this place looks great. I'm really glad we came here. What a beautiful sunset.
Ooh.
And right in that moment, that's when I went, this is a woman I could marry. Okay.
Wow.
It was like, she scored 100 points. I still remember it.
Wow.
Here's an example of the way my wife scored 100 points the other day, which was, I was, you know, now that I'm successful and I have all these offers and people are asking me to do this and this and this and this, a big portion of one day a week, I have to go through all the requests and say no to a lot of people.
Right.
And a lot of people are all sending me their books to read and endorse. I have to say no to a lot
right.
of people. And I'm not used to that. I'm a really nice, loving guy. I've said yes, helped as much people as I can. But suddenly when everybody wants you, you have to start saying no.
Right.
I know you've experienced that.
Right.
So here I am saying no, I'm saying no, I'm saying no, I'm saying no. And this one day, it was a few weeks ago, I was coming home. I was just like feeling beaten up. You know, I guess I'd said no too many times. And I was just feeling down, like I knew these people could really benefit, but I just don't have the time. I can't give to everybody.
Right.
And I was just kind of down. I came home. My wife said, what's the matter? I said, well, I just said no too many times today. These people wanted me, these people. I mean, I'm sure I could really help them if I had the time, but I just don't have the time. And I was down. My wife looked at me and she goes, well, I want you to know you haven't disappointed me.
Mm.
I tell you, the whole thing just lifted.
150 points.
See, right there, you know. It just, you know, yeah. there I'm looking for love, yeah. and it was right there in
right.
that way,
right.
which is just how she responds to me. And what she was saying is, well, maybe you didn't make those people happy, but you sure make me happy.
Wow.
You know, and even if I'm not, you know, able to fulfill all their desires, she still loves me. Or in the case of, even if I can't get to the party on time,
right.
it's not that big of a deal. My feelings are more important than getting there to the party.
Oh, that's nice.
See, and that's the way a woman
really
has to realize. That's when his senses, whenever a man is appearing incompetent, that's when he's most vulnerable. That's when he loves most, needs love the most. And for her to like go, why don't you get out and get a job? You know, like, okay, I just, you know, or why didn't you bring the map? Or how could you miss that exit? You know, or park over there. Don't park here, dumbbell. We got guests in the car. You know, women don't realize they start mothering a man, telling him what to do, and they're losing points.
Yeah.
Whereas this, you know, my wife has got this down, has given a talk over at the university. And I was before there was reception, all these people here to see me, photographers. It wasn't until I got up on stage and they said, you know, I was doing my hair before going on stage and adjusted my tie. Throughout that whole reception, my tie was hanging down. My wife was practicing what we teach, which is don't be your partner's mother. Right. You know, I didn't ask her to clean the lint off my jacket or adjust your tie. She just lets me do it unless I ask.
Right.
So I know I have to ask her. If I want driving instructions, I say, honey, I don't know where we're going tonight. Would you help me?
Right.
If I don't ask, she just goes along for the drive.
Interesting.
And if we don't get there, she doesn't give me a hard time. If I really take a long time to get there and she doesn't give me a hard time, she gets more points. It's like the bigger the blunder, if a woman forgives a man, the more quickly she can forgive him, the more points she gets.
That's fabulous. Yeah. Tell me something. Where do you go next? I mean, you have such an unbelievable awareness of the dynamic relationships, and you've done all these books. What's next for you? What are you most passionate about? You have so many things you're passionate about, and that's one of the things I love about you. I think that's one of the things we share in common. But where are you channeling that now? What's the vehicle you're using?
Well, I think one of the exciting things about this is if we look at a lot of problems today, it's the breakdown of the family.
Right.
And we need to bring the man and woman together. We need the family unit.
Right.
And there's so much divorce. And if we can lessen the divorce rate, that's my goal, is to lessen the divorce rate, create happy marriages so we have family units, so children grow up and we have a healthier society. Because that is at the root of most of the problems today.
Right.
Okay, or many
totally
of them.
Agree with you.
Okay. And then the solution, as I see it, my part in the solution, is you've got the male-female relationship. What is really going to keep men and women together, keep them married? It's romance. You know, it's not like a scientific answer, but that is the answer. Romance. If we can teach men how to provide romance for women and women how to give men what they need romantically, you will have the glue of marriage today. As we talked before, what is the basis of relationships today? Love.
Right.
And romance is a very big part of it. And what I'm seeing is that every relationship, I'm trying to create a structure where men will commit on the calendar one day a month to take their wives somewhere special and have romantic evening.
Right.
And if they can afford it, to go to a hotel even, get away from the home. Create the gourmet experience.
Right.
And if you can't afford it, it's still not an excuse. Get out in your camper and go out in the woods, but take her out there, build that fire, cut the wood, and do it. It will be romantic. Okay? You get out there and do it, whether it's there or in a hotel or wherever, is you create that vacation experience, that romantic experience for her one night a month. Okay. And of course, that means he's going to get all the quickies he wants. So it works on both sides. Okay. But she's getting what she really needs to be happy.
Right.
And every day she looks forward to that. So if he's late or does his little things or he's grumbly or he pulls withdrawn, she goes, yeah, well, he needs to go through that. We're going to have our time. And women don't need that much, that one day to look forward to. And it's consistent. And what I tell men is put it on your calendar. Make a commitment to it because we'll forget.
Right.
We easily forget. Business gets us or she's in a bad mood. We don't want to plan something. So if you plan in advance, that's the first thing. And I'm also into the ultimate romantic vacation, which I'm doing with celebrity cruises to Mars and Venus. So this is where couples can go
oh,
on a vacation
great.
Together and recharge their relationship,
that's
if not
wonderful.
For a year, but for many years, to go on this experience. And what I see, it's one of the most ideal settings for romance is like a cruise because there's no business distractions.
Right.
You're there. And you've got occasional, on certain days, you get to go shopping, which is the ultimate for many women. You get to go shopping.
Right.
You get to see beautiful scenes, go new places. These are all romantic things. Also, all your needs are being taken care of. The woman isn't having to cook, clean, or worry
right.
about things. So she's being taken care of. This allows her to come back to herself and find the loving woman. Because so much today, women have to be the efficient woman. They need to come back to find the loving woman. And to find the loving woman, she needs time where somebody's taking care of her. Now, the nice thing about this, the guy doesn't have to do it all. He's paid for it. These guys are all
right.
doing it. It's a very easy situation.
Right.
And there's nights to dress up. Women love to dress up. So he dresses up. They all get to go. They get pictures taken. You know, all the ingredients of romance are
right.
built into a cruise. And so there you are. And in the cruise, they also have a workshop on Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which helps them learn how to score points. And the women even have little scorecards where they're giving men points. And then there's an achievement dinner for the men where the women give the men awards. You know, there's a romantic evening where the men serve the women the food.
Great.
You know, it's just.
How often does this happen?
Well, this is every cruise now going out with celebrity every week on several ships.
Through the Caribbean.
Through the Caribbean.
Wow. Is there a number you can give us that we can give people? I'd love to make sure that people are.
Well, any of my seminars I do or any of my books or tapes or whatever, they can get information or they can order that through my 800 number. And that's 800-821-3033.
Why don't you give that again?
Okay, 821-3033. Great. And that's the 800 number. But for the cruises to Mars and Venus, actually, they can just go to any travel agent.
Oh, that's great.
And just say cruises to Mars and Venus, and most of them know about it now. And
that's fabulous.
Or they can just say celebrity cruises, and it's part of the cruise.
That's wonderful. How does John Gray want to be remembered? You've contributed so much already. You're still a young man. You got a lot more to do, or be, or experience. How do you want to be remembered?
Well, I'm not ready to be remembered yet.
Good for you.
And I do see, to share a minute about where I see my life going, because, and this is part of where I really, really resonate with your work, is you have to have your direction.
Yeah.
You have to clearly see your goals and see yourself as worthy and capable of that. And I look at my own life, people ask me, where did you get that? And I got a lot of that from my mother, because she used to see me as this young little boy capable of teaching others. And I would talk to her, and she would listen for hours, you know, and she said she could just see the light come into me. And she, you know, I was saying simple things, but she would never correct me or try to, well, I already know that, and she would try to improve it. She just let me be me and learn through my mistakes and so forth and express myself. But I had a tremendous amount of support so I could believe in myself, that I... Who am I to think I can do this? Well, my mother thought I could. So then suddenly I have that extra support. But in my reaching out, part of my life was very spiritual as a monk, and something in Christianity which has touched me very much, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and then all else will be given unto you. And to me, that's very important. Always the highest priority is to be a good person.
Yeah.
If you're good, good things happen to you. So that was my, and that's so simple, but that was my spiritual years. And then I went on to relationship and developed the Mars Venus for men and women. Since that time, a huge passion in my life is parenting. There's so much that the world needs to know about parenting.
Yeah.
Just as we men and women are relating together differently, children are different today. Raising children is phenomenally different, just as everything I'm saying is almost the opposite of what our parents did.
Right.
Raising children needs to be almost the opposite of what we've been trained to do or what was done to us.
Most people would agree with that, I think.
Yeah. But then finding out, you know, there's so many parents who want to be loving to more loving to their children, but what does it mean? How do you communicate that love in a way? Because if you're too, if you say yes to everything your children want, for example, the too permissive parent, then your children become extremely spoiled and they throw tantrums, they become demanding. But to withhold will also make your children not feel worthy.
Yeah.
So to set reasonable boundaries and to know that your children are going to throw tantrums up against that, and to have the skills of embracing your children when they're going through their tantrums so they learn how to come back into control. I want to change the whole model from good children to bad children to taking bad out of it altogether.
Right.
What you have is children who are in control and out of control. Because the only time a child misbehaves is when they're out of control.
Right.
Take away the idea of negative reinforcement, which is punishment, to positive reinforcement, which is reward.
Yes.
Okay. The weakest form of education is punishment. Certainly for management of a situation.
It's only a short-term solution.
Short-term solution never lasts.
And
it's proven to not to last.
Pleasure is always the long-term.
Right. And how to create a situation to teach parents skills so that you give children ways to be positively reinforced and to combat even some of the psychological understandings today which are confusing parents who are trying new ways. For example, one which is it's unhealthy for children to seek your approval. The basic, every child is looking for I'm looking for your approval, you're looking for mine. What makes us healthy is we don't change who we are. We don't give up our integrity to get approval.
Right.
We don't sacrifice who we are to get approval. The people who are people pleasers, who lose themselves to get other people's approval, are children who grew up and their parents never gave them approval.
Right.
Therefore, they're always looking for it. They're
overlooking
for it.
Right.
So that make your children successful. And if the children are not successful, the job of the parent is to make the job easier. If they're not going to do this, make it easier. If you're asking your kids to wash dishes and they're not doing it, then you make the job easier until they enjoy doing it. My kids love to join in when I'm washing dishes. And now the ones that have grown up and left home, they come home and wash dishes. It's amazing. They say, oh, John, you sit down, we'll wash dishes.
Right.
But, you know, I wanted my kids just to do it. Then I can sit down and watch the newspaper. But I realized that's what my dad did. It didn't work. I get in there and do it. And what I did with my kids, I said, you only have to join in for 5 minutes. And after five, because that's a long time for kids.
Yeah.
And we'd even sing songs. We sang roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em, get those doggies rolling. You know, we had a song and a victory and we hugged at the end.
You did the same thing you do in your relationship. You stacked all this pleasure to that process.
You associate the pleasure with the process and the children want to do those things. And the greatest pleasure for a child is the parents' love and approval.
Right.
And parents say, yeah, but I got to spank them, I got to hit them, I got to yell at them. Those things are short-term, on the long term, what they do is they cause the children to become numb to their sensitivities. Yeah. And then they lose connection with their self-corrective mechanism inside. See, our conscience and self-corrective mechanism comes from our feeling self. And if children don't feel safe to express feelings, communicate feelings, and they don't have a feeling connection, a loving feeling connection with their parents, they don't develop the natural self-corrective mechanism inside, which is the genius inside as well. Right. So learning how to take away the yelling, how to take away the punishments, how to take away the hitting, all of that stuff is counterproductive. Yet, centuries ago, when you lived in England and every week somebody was coming in, or every year somebody was coming in to conquer your village, you had to, for the survival of the family, teach little children to be tough, right. Teach little boys to be warriors, to fight, to attack, and all this stuff. Feelings were not good. So we have to teach in a balanced way how to let feelings come up, but also understand how it comes up differently in little boys than little girls. Yeah. So it's a whole, just as relationships, it's a whole new science for us. Parenting.
It's children from Mars and children from Venus.
Children from Mars, boys are from Mars, girls are from Venus. That will be, I think, the next 10 years of my life. I have two more projects. Neat. I have the singles have got so many questions. I have a book, Mars and Venus on a Date, which is
wonderful.
For single people.
Wonderful.
We discussed some of those ideas today.
That's great.
And then after that, I think I'll be pretty complete with a lot of the Mars-Venus.
Right.
I have another book called Mars and Venus in Love, which is testimonials of thousands of couples who were, many of them divorced, who are now happily married, back together after reading this book.
That must make you feel so incredible.
It's very rewarding. I mean, it gives me hope that we really can lower the divorce rate.
Yeah, and change society.
And then change society and create a better world. And after the parenting thing, then I still see a whole nother agenda for me. You know, so many people think that by the time you're 30 or 25 or 40, you've achieved who you are. You know, my clear picture is I'm not even a mature man, fully mature man, till I'm 56. Okay? That's when I feel my real life
why
work
56
begin.
Why 56 specifically?
There's a number in history of completion. Many people die then because they haven't prepared themselves for that point.
Yeah.
But there's two big cycles. There's the, you know, and all the systems, there's the cycles of seven.
Right.
You know, they even talk about how the body, all the cells in the body in 7 years, they're completely different.
Right.
And then there's four cycles of seven, which take you to age 28. Most people go through a major life change around 28. That's when you grow up. Hmm. You know, and most people, they thought it was 21. That's the third seven cycle. You got puberty, which is the second.
Right.
You know, you've got seven is where you start going to school. 14, you've got puberty. 21, you leave home. 28 is where you become an adult. Okay. That's when
you 56, you become?
56, you become an expression of God's will in this world.
Hmm.
You know, and to there, we're preparing for it.
Wow.
And that's why I'm looking forward to really doing that work at that time. And everybody should look forward to the greatest ecstasies as they get older. And it can be that way if we have love in our lives. When we don't have love in our lives, that's a source of enormous distress and disease in the body, and we age too quickly.
Well, you are a great teacher because you're a great soul. And I feel very, very grateful to count you as a friend and thrilled that you've taken this much time.
It has been a great pleasure. This is my favorite interview of all interviews.
I'm so glad. May I, as a male, give you a gentle or testosterone hug? Really, John, you're awesome. I know a lot of lives will be touched.
Thank you. Wow, that's a great interview.
I got to ask you one question. I want to end on this because I was really touched when I was reading one of your books. In fact, I guess it was your second book, and you wrote it back in 1989, and I didn't know this about your background, but I guess your father was struck and walked in his trunk and I guess died from that experience. How did that affect you, and how does that affect maybe your sensitivity and your relationships, and what's the meaning you pulled from that? I know you shared it in the book, but I was really touched by it. I was wondering if you'd share it.
That was a huge turning point in my career and in my life. It's also the year I married my wife, Bonnie. We were on our honeymoon, and somebody called and said, "Your father is dead." And my father was basically very healthy and happy, and I had a wonderful relationship with him. And I was shocked. I said, How? And they said, "He was found dead in his trunk." It was just like this. I exploded with enormous grief and upset and feeling around this. And what I had to do is I had to understand what he went through. I needed to connect with my father. And what had happened is he was driving in his car, and he picked up a hitchhiker. He liked to pick up hitchhikers, and he was robbed, and his money was gone. He was left in the trunk, and he died of heat asphyxiation in the trunk. And I just needed to connect with my father, and I talked to my mother, and you have to understand these things to process it. And what I wanted to do is actually, I just felt this urge, I had to do it. I wanted to get into the trunk and know what he went through. Every son wants to know his father. And we were getting so close, because the little boy, I really didn't know him that well. I was the fifth in the family, and some of my brothers had problems, and he'd kind of given up on parenting. He was sort of at a distance, and I never really knew him. I was much closer to my mother. And as an adult, I'd gotten much closer to him, and suddenly this had happened. And I just had to get into the trunk, and I got in the trunk of the car, and my whole family was on the outside. And when I was inside, I saw what he went through, all the things he did to get out. You know, I saw where he had taken a screwdriver and had banged it on the roof. You could see the little places, the cuts in the roof. And I saw where he had pried back the light, the back lights, to get air. And he had broken a hole in it so he could get air. And I saw different things he had moved around in there. And then, while I was in the trunk, I just, without thinking, I put my hand outside the hole. You know, you see a hole, you put your hand through it. I put my hand out.
To where the light was?
Where the light was, where he was getting his air. And I just stuck my hand out. And then as I was pulling it back in, my brother, who was on the outside of the trunk, Tom, he says, John, see if you can press the button from there.
You mean to open the hood?
To open the hood. And I just reached around, pushed the button, and the hood opened.
What did you think?
It was like everybody stopped in that moment. When you're inside the trunk trying to get out, you don't think about how easy it is to get in. Here he was thinking, how do I get out? But it just didn't enter his mind. If I can just reach my hand from the outside, how could I get in? It took somebody standing outside the trunk to say, why don't you try pushing the button? And it became so clear to me that in any way I possibly could stand outside of somebody else's problem and just say, here's the button. Just push the button and the trunk door will open. Because for me and so many men and so many women, they're locked in that trunk. Yeah. We're trying to get out. We don't know how. And the only way we know how to get it out of the trunk is our framework that we live within, the framework of being trapped in the trunk trying to get out. And all it can take is someone standing outside of that trunk to say, push this button, and the thing opened. And that was like a revelation for me. And that was the commitment. A commitment in my life that's what I'm about, is where I'm standing outside of that trunk, let me push the button. And of course, there's people who've helped me push the button to get outside of my trunks. And I continue getting out of trunks as well as helping people get out of theirs.
Kind of like what an angel does.
And since you say that, and since this is a very special interview, I'll share another story that I've never shared. That one's in my book. But if you were to ask me how I started even getting into the whole thing of relationships and teaching about relationships, because I had been a monk for 9 years and my devotion was God.
Right.
And during that time, my younger brother Jimmy was having lots of problems, and he became manic depressive, bipolar. Mm-hmm. He would go up and come down and go up and come down. And what had happened was he'd become suicidal. And one time when I was home visiting my family, I went to visit my brother Jimmy, my little brother. I found him in his room and he was asleep, and I didn't try to wake him up. He wouldn't wake up. And I came back the next day and he was still asleep, and he had attempted suicide. He'd taken pills and to kill himself. And I then took him and tried to help him, brought him to a doctor, went to a whole treatment with him and did everything I could to help him and helped him a bit. And then I went off to being a monk again. Then he had another episode and I came back. This was after 9 years of being a monk. And at that time, I had really achieved beautiful spiritual experiences. Maslow talks about peak experiences in your life, spiritual ones.
Yes.
That was my time. It was around 28 as well. And I was, every year as a monk, my ritual was first 7 days to fast and stay in silence. And I'd come home during that time. So I went to another town to privately go into silence and fast. And my experiences in meditation and prayer, and I didn't sleep hardly at all, were very exalted. I started hearing the angels sing. And I heard the angels sing, and for days it went on till the end. And I thought, gee, I could just go to heaven now. And I really felt fulfilled in my purpose in this world. I mean, it was so heavenly. I mean, there's this music is going on all the time, but we don't hear it because we're on the earthly plane. And when I would go out of this room and talk to people, the music would start disappearing. And I said, I think I'd rather go back to heaven. And I went back to my room and decided I was just going to keep meditating and keep fasting. My brother found me. And right there, he found me and he asked for my help. He had a breakdown right there. His mind started scrambling and speeding up. And I had a choice. I could go back in and meditate and go back to heaven, or I could take care of my brother. And that's when I stopped being, that's the real story why I stopped being a monk, because I took my brother and I drove him back to Houston, and I took 9 days where I tried to help him, and I couldn't, and I had to commit him into a mental hospital. And I was so hurt, I mean, I was just so distressed and despair. I just wanted so much to help my brother, and he's a loving person, but just didn't fit into this world the way some of us do. A very sensitive soul, a loving person, but he would snap. And that's when I started studying psychology, which was to help my brother Jimmy. And for years, that was my prime focus. So I went to school, studied psychology, started teaching about psychology, the whole time trying to help him. And I wasn't able to cure him. You know, it was a couple of years after my father died, he then committed suicide.
Wow.
And even then, my grief was my failure in helping him, but I realized that and I talk to him now in my heart, and I say, you know, you may not have achieved your goals in your life, but you gave me a direction in my life. Yeah. And what I do today in helping people is because of you.
Well, the truth is, you're helping your brother every day today.
And he helps me.
And all of your brothers, and all of your sisters.
And that I feel is my real purpose in this world, is not so much to find heaven, but to bring heaven into the world. Hmm. And I think that's everybody's reason for being here, is to bring God, bring heaven into this world. And right now, the step I take is to help people with relationships, and also for me to have a good relationship.
Yeah.
And to be a role model, but also to know that every time a person chooses to make up, to forgive, to apologize, to take responsibility, when they make that step, it helps everybody else make that step.
Yeah.
It makes it easier. They may not know you, they may not know what happened, but it just makes it easier. And if we don't do it, with all the information and all the opportunities and all the education I've had, how can I expect anybody else to?
You're a good brother. You're a good friend. You're a great teacher.
Thank you.
God bless you.